Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All righty, it is 11:07 on a Saturday night here. It's September 1st, Lisa, and it's program 314 in the series. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I am your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes, it is. I will be laboring,
oh,
I promise
you.
Yeah,
what are you doing? What's your hard labor this weekend?
I'm going to work.
Right?
Just
digging ditches
nonstop.
And things.
Yeah, because
taking a bath or something.
That's why I have all of these calluses on my hands
from
all the
rough around the edges.
Ditch digging I do.
Yeah.
We have the Aldridge Family for you. Good comedy from 1953. After that, it's Suspense with Joseph Cotten in The Thing in the Window. Good scary radio show. After that, it's Philo Vance Detective starring Jackson Beck. So we have three great radio shows. We'll take you all the way to 2 a.m. And it's all brought to you in part by Cats Pride. Let's play their game, Cats Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Gandhi.
Gandhi.
Right. All Did you see it?
Aye.
I'm going to go with that's a no.
That's
okay.
Ever
you know what?
Did see that.
The beauty of this game.
I heard it was a very long movie.
Long, right? The beauty of this game is you don't even have to have seen the movie to play.
If a movie is over 2 hours, I generally won't see it.
Generally, if there's any subtitles or it's too long, you're out.
Yeah. All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They are going to win a Never Measure.
Okay. Never Measure. All
yes.
right. So call us, 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller, play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Claudia on the line to play with us tonight. Hi, Claudia.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
Hi, Claudia.
Good.
Good. We're glad you're going to play the game. Did you see the movie?
What was the title again?
It's Gandhi.
Gandhi.
1982.
Yes, I did.
Good.
See that movie. I love that movie.
All right. I think you're going to get this one. All right. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Number one, I have seen hundreds of thousands of escaped slaves. Number two, but I didn't know I was a slave. Number three, we think it's time that you recognize that you are masters in someone else's home.
Hmm.
Hmm, what sounds right?
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I'll go with number two.
Number two. Carl, you like that one or you like a different one?
No, I like Claudia.
Okay, well, I like Claudia.
But I don't.
That's good.
That's a good thing. It's a good start.
But I don't like number two.
You don't like number two?
I like number one.
You like number one. Okay. All right, so let's hear it.
We think it is time you recognized that you are masters in someone else's
home. It's number three.
So it was number three.
Oh,
but you
boy.
Guys were both so close. And you know what? Claudia was closer because
she
picked
was.
Number two. Because of that, she, and not you,
wins the Never Measure.
And
nice.
You can easily center and level and hang all of your wall decorations fast. No need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It is veteran-owned, made in the USA. You can get yours at nevermeasure.com. You know what, Claudia? My husband was using our Never Measure just this weekend to hang a picture. I am going to post that picture, and you can see how cool this device actually is. So I hope that you love it. It's really fantastic.
I'm sure I will. I've been wanting one of those.
Oh,
so
I'm so glad. Terrific. Thank you for calling
in. Way to go, Claudia.
Take care.
Thanks, Claudia. All right. Well, our producer tonight is Curtis Koch.
Yay. Hey, Curtis.
What's going on, Curtis?
Not much. Great to be back with you guys.
Yes,
we
it's always great to have you.
I was
going to
say, we always feel that we're in good hands, kind of like the Allstate people, because we're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, because you know the show, and you always do a stellar job.
Yes,
so thank
you
for being
do.
Here.
All right, well, we are going to tune in now to the Aldridge Family, but I want to remind our listeners that we have a text in line. That's very important because on Saturday nights,
it's important to me.
We're here till 2 a.m. Sunday morning.
Right.
And Lisa, she's out by about 1, maybe 12:30.
I'm sleeping already. Can't
she's
you
like,
tell? Fast asleep as we
so
speak.
So the text in line is how you can keep her up. Please text us. Let us know if you have any questions about the show, any comments, or if you want to hear some certain programs. We'll be happy to do that for you. Our text in line, we love hearing from our listeners, is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Text us. We love, love, love to hear from
and
you.
And also you can check out our Facebook page as well, WGN Radio Theater. We have pictures posted of some of the stars from each of these radio shows. We have a fun fact, and we always have some great stuff. And you'll see a picture of the Never Measure.
Yeah, that's right. And don't forget to join the Classic Radio Club. We've had lots and lots of people signing up to the Classic Radio Club. If you don't know what that is, just go to classicradioclub.com. You will get sent CDs of classic radio shows to your home every single month. Check it out, classicradioclub.com. Join it. It's a lot of fun. All right, it's time now for the Aldridge Family, and this was a teenage situation comedy series. And it was heard on radio, seen in films and on television, and it was also seen in comic book form. It was created by Clifford Goldsmith, and Henry Aldridge was a bumbling kid. He was growing awkwardly into adolescence, just like me, just like I am
You're
right now.
You're still growing, I know.
And came to radio in 1939 on NBC, and an actor by the name of Ezra Stone played the role for many, many years, but by 1952, Bobby Ellis took over. We have a Bobby Ellis episode for you tonight, and you're going to like it a lot. Let's go back to a broadcast date of March 15th, 1953, and this is all about his Latin homework. Here's part one now of the Aldridge Family.
In just a minute, it's the Aldridge Family on NBC. Academy Award time is with us again, and it's the period of the year when everyone is wondering who will win the Oscar. Why don't you listen to the Academy Award presentation next Thursday night on NBC and find out? Of course, each weekday, NBC brings great listening into your home, too. There's Bob Hope and Dave Garraway with easygoing shows, your daily visit with One Man's Family, and the latest foreign reports with Morgan Beatty's News of the World, as well as John Cameron Swayze's capsule commentary each evening. Check your newspaper and tune to this station. Now it's the Aldridge Family on NBC.
Henry! Henry Aldridge!
Coming, Mother.
Yes, it's the Aldridge Family is transcribed, written by Clifford Goldsmith. Whatever your teenage years were, hectic, adventuresome, or shining, you can never forget them. They're an important part of you. And whenever you go back to them in memory, you'll always find a typical boy like Henry Aldridge right in the middle of them. The scene opens at the Aldridge telephone. The time is evening.
Hello? Hello, is this Lucy Smith?
Yeah.
Lucy, this is Henry. Did I by any chance leave my Latin book at your house this afternoon?
Well,
you sure I didn't leave it out in your kitchen? Well, has your mother been in or around your refrigerator lately?
Henry, ask her whether she's seen my Latin book, too.
Homer, keep quiet. Hello, Lucy. Look, if you do find one, could you give me a ring?
Henry, does she think she can find
Goodbye. It? Homer, do you realize that whenever I talk on the phone, all you do is stand there and ask questions?
Well, gee whiz, you never tell me anything. Who are you going to call next?
Never mind. Hello?
Oh, who, Henry? Can't you tell me who?
Number, please.
Operator, give me Elm 227.
Elm.
Henry!
Mother, I think I'm on the trail. You just go on reading your paper.
Henry, do you mean to say you haven't found your Latin book yet?
Well, not yet exactly, Mother.
Well, you better not let your father hear you haven't found it.
Well, there isn't anything to worry about, Mrs. Aldridge. It'd be different if we didn't know where we went today.
Well, just the same, Henry, better find it in a hurry.
Hello?
Hello, Aunt Harriet, this is Henry.
Henry who?
Henry, your nephew. Don't you remember Aunt Harriet?
Oh, yeah, hello.
Hello. Now, look, have you happened by any chance to see Cicero around your house?
Oh.
Cicero. Yeah, we've been studying him this year.
Oh, you mean, oh, what color was it?
Just a minute. Homer, what does our Latin book look like?
What do you mean? Like a book?
What color? What color?
Is it black?
Black? I thought it was sort of...
Henry, it's brown, isn't it? A nice sort of brown with Cicero printed on it.
Hello, Aunt Harriet. Brown. And there were two of them, Homer's and mine.
Has she seen them, Henry?
Well, have you been in or around your refrigerator lately?
I'll ask her whether she's had her dinner yet.
Thanks, Aunt Harriet. Goodbye.
Henry.
Homer, be looking up another number.
Henry?
Yes, Father?
You and Homer still out there at that phone?
Henry, I think I'll go outside and sit on the front porch for a while.
Yeah, but Homer.
Henry.
Yes, Father, just a minute.
Number, please.
It's just a question of time, and I'll have the darn thing.
Number, please.
Operator, give me Elm 344.
Elm 344.
Yes, please.
The whole trouble is, Henry, that you don't pay attention to anything you do. There it is, the night before you have to get an 88 on an examination to bring your average up to pass.
Father, I don't like to contradict you, but all I need to pull me through is a flat 85. I spent nearly an hour this afternoon figuring it out.
Hello?
Hello, Eleanor, this is Henry.
Instead of figuring out a thing like that, you should have been looking for your Latin.
Just a minute, Eleanor. Sure, Father, I agree with you, absolutely. Eleanor, have you seen my Latin book?
Has she?
Yes. I mean, no. I mean, Eleanor, when we were in your kitchen and we put the ice tray back, did we put anything else in with it? Well, like a Cicero.
What'd you do this afternoon? Visit every refrigerator in town?
Oh, well, goodbye, Father. I mean, Eleanor.
You see that, Henry? Your mind isn't on a single thing you do.
Father, this isn't a result of anything my mind did.
I agree. It's what your mind doesn't do.
Yeah, but, Father, don't you see? There's a swell chance I may not even need my Latin book tonight.
Why not?
Because I'm not even sure we're going to have an exam tomorrow.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Homer, isn't there a possibility that we don't have an exam until day after tomorrow?
Henry, you've asked me that three times. Miss Wheeler said it was tomorrow's second period, and that's all there is to it.
Are you sure, Homer? Because my father's standing right here. Quosque tandem abuteri Catalina patientia nostra. There, Homer, what does that mean?
Go on and finish it.
I have finished it. Quosque tandem abuteri Catalina patientia nostra. That means, Homer, how long will you abuse our patience, O Catiline?
It does?
Sure. Now, can you give it to me?
Sure. O Catiline. O Catiline. Henry, could you read it again, please?
The whole thing?
Well, of course not the whole thing. Do you think I'm dumb? Just give me the first word.
Quosque, quosque.
Oh, yes, quosque.
Look, Homer, does this give you any hint as to what it is? When you measure something, what's the first thing you want to know?
Where's the ruler?
No, Homer. Supposing you've got the ruler, what's the next thing you want to know? What is it you ask yourself?
Henry, are you sure that's Cicero you're reading?
Sure, Homer, sure. It's your own book. Didn't my mother just find it down in the preserve closet? Now listen carefully and see whether this brings back anything. Quosque tandem abutere.
Give me one more clue.
Homer, if I give you any more, I'll have given you the whole thing.
Well, no, I won't, Henry. Honest, I won't. Catiline is measuring something. I know that.
No, Homer.
Listen, Henry, how long are you going to hold out on me?
Homer, you got the whole thing.
What whole thing?
Well, you just said it. How long will you abuse our patience, Catiline?
Well, Henry, I knew that part all right, but is that all there is to it?
Sure, it's as easy as rolling off a log.
Henry!
Let's not talk so loud, Homer. My folks have gone to bed. Now for the next one.
Henry, are you sure tomorrow's exam covers the first three orations?
Well, I heard her say the first three. Now listen. Abbot, excessit, evasit, erupit.
Why,
Homer, it means he departed, he withdrew, he went out, he broke forth.
Sure, that's just what I was going to say.
You're crazy.
I am not. I knew it all the time.
All right, I'll read it again. Abbott, excessit, evasit, erupit. What does it mean?
What's so tough about that?
All right, tell me what it means.
Sure. He came in, he fell down, he got up, he fell down again. Is that someone calling?
No, I don't think so.
Well, okay, shoot me another. I'm getting hot.
Henry, do you realize what time it is?
What time, Mother?
Well, it's just a little after 10, isn't it? It's 20 minutes to 12, and you promised me that if I let Homer stay here overnight, you'd behave yourselves.
But, Mother, all we've been doing is sitting here quietly with Cicero.
Sure, Mrs. Aldrich.
I'm sorry, but you were talking as loud as you could. And what's more, it doesn't seem to me that you should have to study as late as this. But, Mother, you have no idea what a stiff exam Miss Wheeler can give.
Well, it shouldn't be stiff if you'd paid attention.
Alice, will you please come to bed?
Sam, I'm talking to the boys.
I'd like to get back to sleep.
Mother, I have paid attention, but Miss Wheeler double-crossed us.
I'll say she did.
What do you mean she double-crossed you?
Well, Mother, she stood up in class after we're almost through with the last three orations of Cicero and announces that the examination will cover the first three.
Sure, and we haven't looked at those since last term.
And she didn't give you any advance warning?
No, Mrs. Aldridge, not since February.
Sure. And here we are stuck when we ought to be in bed.
Henry, go to bed!
Yes, Sam, he's going!
But, Mother, don't you realize that if we don't study this, our whole year's work will be in vain?
Father, you know what Father's going to do.
But, Henry...
And, Mrs. Aldridge, this is one course I don't want to have to take over again.
Homer, I'd like to say something to both of
but
you.
But listen, Mother...
Now, wait, Henry, let me explain this to her.
Oh, listen, Homer. What does this mean? In Romuli Fice.
What that means? Among the dregs of Romulus.
Good, that's swell. How about Homer? Homer, are you asleep?
Listen, Henry, stop shaking me.
Not so loud, Homer. Do you want to wake my folks?
I wasn't talking loud.
Well, you are now, and it's 2:50.
Okay. Give me that last sentence again.
Homer, why don't we be sensible? Why don't you set the alarm for 7:00 and finish in the morning? Homer? Homer, do you realize you've got your head right in the middle of my collection of rocks? And Homer, some of those are valuable.
Give me that sentence again, Henry.
Didn't you hear what I said, Homer?
Rocky or what?
I said, let's quit and go down and get something to eat.
Oh, boy. Do you have any breakfast cereal? You know, the kind I like?
Sure. I think I'll have some myself.
With plenty of milk on it.
And cream.
Oh, wait till I set this alarm for 7.
Listen, Henry, how about setting it for 7:05? I need to sleep.
Homer, we've got work to do.
What time is it, Sam?
9:20. I ought to be at the office by now.
My goodness, I ought to be getting ready to go out myself.
It's a wonder either one of us woke up this morning after being kept awake all night by the boys. What time did they finally stop wrestling?
Sam, they weren't wrestling.
Alice, I heard them myself. Homer kept yelling at the top of his lungs. He'd come in, he'd fall down, he'd get up. Then he'd do it all over again.
Not dear.
Why, didn't you hear them? How'd they look when they had breakfast?
Well, I didn't see them at breakfast. They must have come down quite early.
Yes?
Yes, I was just going to call them when I happened to find their cereal dishes out by the sink. And, Sam, I have never been so upset about anything in all my life.
What about?
Why, imagine their Latin teacher giving them an exam they had to sit up half the night studying for.
I still say that if Henry had paid attention, a thing like that wouldn't happen.
Dear, under ordinary circumstances, I'd agree with you. But their teacher double-crossed them. Henry explained the whole thing to me.
Shh, Alice.
Yes, Sam?
Listen. Did I hear someone moving around upstairs?
Well, I certainly don't hear anything. It couldn't be Mary. She left the house at least 10 minutes ago. And, Sam, you didn't let me finish. I'm going down and see Miss Wheeler today.
Who's Miss Wheeler?
Henry's Latin teacher. I think it's time I had a heart-to-heart talk with her.
All right, that's the first portion of the Aldridge family, March 15th, 1953. And Henry has his Latin homework to do, Lisa. Bobby Ellis starring, along with Jack Grimes as his pal Homer Brown on that show, as heard on NBC. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, these words. Well, we had a really fun sort of meet and greet this week, huh, Curtis? and Lisa?
Well, it was sort of an office party, so
yeah,
we could
really
show off our
fun.
New space. And we
yeah, you guys are rocking the karaoke stage.
Yeah, I posted some pictures of that. You can check it out.
Lisa can sing, I'll tell you that. You're a good singer, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl. I work really hard at that.
Everybody else was having fun. I had to work the Sox game.
Did you?
Yeah.
So I was
watching all you guys singing and thinking, dang, I would like to be out there.
We
right
did
now.
Have some karaoke. It was a lot of fun. We sang Still Rock and Roll to Me, I think.
Little
right?
Billy Joel.
We yeah.
Sang, yep, a few
and
songs.
We got to meet a lot of our sponsors here. And
we did.
There was some great horses d'oeuvres.
What?
Hors d'oeuvres.
Right.
There was a bunch of
well, it's always great to see some of the weekday people that we don't have a chance to hang out with on the weekends.
Yeah, and they had like...
And we saw Curtis.
Beverages and a bunch of different things to eat. It was pretty swanky.
It was a lot of fun.
Very swanky. I tell you, WGN knows how to throw a party. I'll
and
tell
we
you that.
Had we got party favors.
Yeah, and we were invited.
Did you get your party favor?
I did not get my party favor.
You didn't get it?
No.
It was a Bluetooth speaker.
It is, and it's got a WGN logo on it. It's really cool.
See, wow, I told you, I missed out on everything because I was working the game.
Well, I've got one for sale.
Okay. How much is that going to be?
Oh, more than you can afford.
A lot of money. All right, well, it is 11:31. It's time for WGN News. Here is David Jennings.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Hey, you know, we had a listener just call us and say, hey, you know what? We don't have access to a computer. We want to join the Classic Radio Club. There is a phone number that you can dial if you want to talk to a live operator 24/7 that will sign you up to the Classic Radio Club. To learn more about the Classic Radio Club, you can go to our website, which is classicradioclub.com. But if you do not have access and you'd like to join, you can dial toll-free 888-642-6556. Once again, 888-642-6556. That's the direct number to operators 24/7 that will sign you up to the Classic Radio Club. All right, it's time now for the conclusion to the Aldrich family.
Hey, Homer.
Hey? Homer, wake up.
Henry?
Hey, what's that? Did the alarm go off?
Not yet. I woke up about 5 minutes ago.
Gee whiz, is it raining out?
Not so loud, Homer. Do you want to wake up my whole family? It isn't raining. The shades are down.
Oh.
What time is it anyhow?
There's the clock right there. 7:50.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
What's the matter?
Oh, no. Well, I thought when I first looked at it, it said 10:25.
It's a funny thing, Homer, but so did I. Come on, let's tiptoe down to the kitchen in our pajamas and get some breakfast.
All right. How about a little more of that cereal and some bananas?
We haven't got any bananas. Quiet now, Homer. As soon as we get through, we'll come back and finish studying.
Okay.
You know, it's funny, but I feel as refreshed as though I'd slept until 9 or 10 o'clock.
You...
Homer, don't trip on these stairs. You'll wake everybody up.
And he asked me what quosque tandem and all that sort of thing means.
What does it mean?
It's how long will you abuse our patients, Cataline?
That's swell, Homer. Just a second while I put in a telephone call.
At this hour of the morning? Who are you going to call?
I think they'll be up by now.
Number, please.
Elm 753.
I beg your pardon?
Elm 753.
Elm 753.
Quiet! I mean, that's all right. Go ahead and ring him.
Will you please tell me who you're calling?
Homer, I think I know where I left my Cicero yesterday. Remember when we dropped into Jimmy Bartlett's for a second?
Hello?
Hello, is this Mrs. Bartlett?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, this is Henry Aldrich. Did you find a Latin book anywhere around your kitchen?
Henry, could you speak up a little?
Well, I would, Mrs. Bartlett, but I don't want to wake my folks up.
Oh, why they sleep, Henry?
No, they're just getting a good night's sleep. I'll tell you, could I speak to Jimmy, please?
To Jimmy? He's left for school.
What's that?
Yes, of course. He left a long time ago.
Gee whiz, what time do you have to be there?
At 9 o'clock.
Well, I know, but what time is it now?
Quarter to
what? Quarter to... Homer, do you know what time it is?
What time is it?
Mother!
What time is it?
Mother!
Henry, I asked you what time it is.
Mother, Mary!
Mrs. Aldrich!
Mother!
Hey, Henry, slow down and wait.
wait for me.
What's the matter with you, Homer? Can't you run?
Gee, was I dressed in such a hurry? Look at me. I got my shoes on the wrong feet.
Don't you realize the exam started 15 minutes ago?
Henry White, your pajamas are showing.
Where?
Below your pants. Stop and pull them up.
I haven't got time.
Henry, don't go in that door. That's the girls' entrance.
Homer, what difference does it make in a time like this? Come on.
We'll open it.
I'm trying to. It's locked.
Now, you see that? Now we've lost more time.
Wait, it's open. I forgot doors in schools open out.
Listen, Henry, don't you pay attention to anything.
But where are the stairs? Where are the stairs?
I don't know. How would I know where they are?
Homer, don't go through that door. That's the girls' gym.
Yeah, I know. Who's this swell-looking girl on the parallel bars? Hey!
Homer, quit it. Come on. Well, let's try this way.
Boy, are my feet blistered.
Same here. We should have brought our socks along with us. And come on up these stairs.
Henry, don't you see that sign? It says down only.
Homer, stop criticizing everything and come on.
Where does that door go to?
Gee whiz, we're in the clear.
You mean we're outdoors again?
No, we're in the main hall. There's Miss Wheeler's room right over there.
Oh, don't make so much noise. You wanted to notice us when we go in? Wait a second, Homer. Wait a second. We gotta sign our names on this bulletin board before we go in.
Oh, yeah. Well, sign mine and hurry up.
Wait a second. Hey, Homer, how does my hair look?
Why worry about a thing like that?
You should see yours.
Just pull up your pajamas and come on.
Quiet, Homer, quiet.
Gee whiz, where's Miss Wheeler?
I don't know. Hey! Hey, Lucy!
What?
Where's Miss Wheeler?
She got called down to the office.
She did? Boy, are we in luck. Has the exam started?
Yes. The papers are up there on the desk.
Come on, Henry. Let's get them and get started. The period's almost half through.
Boy, I wish I'd had time to eat some breakfast. My stomach's turning over.
Henry, your pajamas are slipping off, too.
The point is this, Miss Wheeler.
Yes, Mrs. Aldrich.
Well, I do appreciate your coming down here to the office when I know you're holding an examination upstairs. But don't you think there's something wrong when a boy has to study half the night and then get up practically before sunrise and study some more?
I do indeed, Mrs. Aldrich. And I hope you won't misunderstand. But my observation has been that Henry doesn't pay as much attention as he should.
Miss Wheeler, if Henry were the only one who had to study practically all night, it would be different. But Homer Brown stayed up just as late and was up again at sunrise.
Mrs. Aldrich, I hope you won't misinterpret what I'm about to say. But Homer Brown doesn't pay any better attention than your son does. And incidentally, if you would care to look on that desk, you'll find Henry's copy of Cicero. It was found in DeHaven's drugstore yesterday.
Oh, really? Oh, well, naturally, I realize Henry isn't perfect, Miss Wheeler. But don't you think that if a subject is made interesting, young people will take an interest in it?
I appreciate your frankness, Mrs. Aldrich. And I certainly hope you won't think I'm in any way criticizing. But when Henry finished his Caesar class last year, I went to Mr. Bradley and I told him I felt it was extremely unwise for us to permit him to take Cicero this year.
Just how do you expect Henry to get into college without Cicero?
By working, Mrs. Aldrich. By working very hard.
I see. Is there a public telephone here I might use?
Miss Shay, would you please show Mrs. Aldrich where the telephone is?
Well, there's a booth right over here in the corner, Mrs. Aldrich.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good day, Miss Wheeler.
Goodbye, Mrs. Aldrich.
What's the matter with her?
Is it my fault her son had to sit up all night getting ready for tomorrow's exam?
Tomorrow? I thought you were giving exams today.
I am, but only in Julius Caesar. Cicero is tomorrow.
Now, getting back to the troubles of Henry Aldrich. Due to the fact that Henry and Homer overslept this morning, they arrived at school 20 minutes late and have gone in to take the wrong Latin exam. Mrs. Aldrich, who assumes that they got up in time, has taken their side in the trouble that follows. This scene opens in the examination room.
Boy, oh boy.
Homer, not so loud.
Henry, did you ever see a tougher exam?
I'll say.
I don't recognize any part of it.
Boy, Homer, am I hungry. I'm so hungry, everything's spinning.
Henry, have you answered any?
Not yet. Maybe these are on the pages we were going to study this morning, but didn't.
Hey, Henry, here's one I recognize. Here's one.
Which one is it?
Winnie, Weedy, Wiki.
Well, sure, don't you remember? He came in, he fell down, he got up, he went out. Sure. Homer, don't tell me. Don't tell me. That's cheating.
Excuse me, Mr. Bradley, but did you send for me?
Yes, Miss Wheeler. Come right in. Tell me, have you Henry Aldrich's and Homer Brown's examination papers with you?
No, I'm afraid I haven't. I sent the boys home with them.
Oh, dear, that's too bad.
I didn't know you wanted to see them, Mr. Bradley. I also gave Henry his copy of Cicero, his mother left in the telephone booth.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry about the papers because Henry's father and Homer's father are dropping in for a talk in a few minutes.
You don't say so.
I thought they might find those examination papers rather enlightening.
You mean the fact that they took an exam in Caesar and thought it was in Cicero?
Yes. But never mind, I've sent for Miss Johnson to come in. That will help some.
Yes, Mr. Bradley. You're referring, of course, to that awful thing Henry and Homer did this morning.
Yes, I am.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're going to report them. If Mr. Aldrich and Mr. Brown think for 1 minute that this school...
Excuse me, Mr. Bradley, but Mr. Aldrich and Mr. Brown are here to see you.
Thank you, Miss Shay. Please show them in.
Mother, could I have just one more sip, please?
Here you are, dear. Now, put your head back on the pillow.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just when did this awful headache begin, Henry?
Well, it's a funny thing, Mother. Just as I began taking that Latin exam, everything began to spin.
With me, Mrs. Aldridge, I began to spin... Boy, I'm still spinning.
Well, you just stay in that bed over there, Homer, and Henry, you stay in this bed, and you're both going to feel just fine.
And I don't have to go home and tell my folks that... I don't have to go home and tell them?
No, Homer, I'll phone them.
But when you do, Mrs. Aldridge, would you mind not mentioning my Latin exam? Because my father was sort of counting on me not having a breakdown until school was over for the year.
Alice!
Yes, Sam, are you back?
When Henry comes in, I want to see him.
He's right here, dear.
Tell him to come down here.
Why, Father?
Dear, he can't possibly come. You'll have to come up here.
Up there? Where is he? What's the reason he can't come down?
We're right here.
I want to have a talk with him.
Hello, Father.
Henry, what are you doing in your mother's bed?
Why,
And who's that in my bed?
Hello, Mr. Aldridge.
Now, Sam, let's not talk quite so loud. Both of the boys are feeling just terrible.
I should think they would. I should think they'd want to crawl right under the bed.
Why, Father?
Yes, I ought to take you out of school and put you to work.
Why, Sam Aldrich!
Alice, do you realize what's happened to me? Do you realize?
Well, dear, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Didn't you phone and ask me to go over and have a talk with Mr. Bradley? And didn't Will Brown and I go?
Oh, boy.
Now, dear, you're Henry's father. It was your duty to go and get things straightened out.
I got them straightened out. Alice, I have never been so humiliated, so chagrined.
So what, Mr. Aldrich?
We'll skip the fact that after studying Caesar for 2 years and Cicero for 1 year, you boys don't know the difference between the two.
Did they tell you about that?
They did.
Well, Father, it isn't as though I didn't know the difference. As a matter of fact, when I walked into the examination, I noticed all the faces were different.
Well, sure. We thought they were taking makeup exams.
Sam, what happened?
Alice, don't you get into this. I'm skipping the fact that you left Henry's Latin book in the phone booth.
Oh, is that where I left it?
Mother, how did you happen to do a thing like that?
We'll skip everything except two questions. First, what were you boys doing prowling through the girls' gymnasium trying to flirt? Flirt, mind you, with Miss Johnson, the girls' gym teacher.
When did we ever do that, Mr. Aldrich? When did we ever do that?
One of you even whistled at her.
Was that Miss Johnson on the parallel bars?
And second, who, may I ask, is going to pay for your tutoring during Easter vacation?
The tutoring, Father? What tutoring?
What do you mean, what tutoring? The tutoring that you signed up for.
Where, Mr. Aldrich?
On the bulletin board. I saw your signatures with my own eyes right outside the student bathroom.
Is that what we sign?
Not for a course in Caesar. Not for a course in Cicero. But for a course in advanced trigonometry.
Trigonometry? Now, listen, Henry, did you sign my name to that?
He did, Homer. And, Henry, that's exactly what you get for not paying attention. I'll answer the phone. It's probably the police.
The police, Father? Did you report me to the police?
I did not. But on top of everything else, when I got home a few minutes ago, I found the car had been stolen.
Mr. Aldridge, I didn't even touch it. I've been right up here in bed all the time.
Sam, how could anyone have taken it out of our garage?
Hello?
Central High School. May I speak to Mr. Aldridge, please?
This is Mr. Aldridge. Now what's happened?
Let him out.
Let him out?
Yes, you left your car right in front of the driveway, and it's locked, and we can't move it.
Well, I'll be right over.
Sam, who was it?
Nothing, not a thing. They just found my car.
They did, Father? Where?
If you know what's good for you, young man, you'll get out of bed and study your Cicero right now.
But, Father, that's the beautiful part of it. We've got the first three orations all studied.
Henry, it might interest you to know that your examination tomorrow is not on the first three orations, but on the last three.
The last three? The last three, Mr. Aldridge? Gee whiz, what am I getting out of bed for?
Henry, that's the doorbell. You have your bathrobe on. Go down and see who it is.
Yes, Mother.
And here, take your Cicero.
Oh, yes, sure. Thank you very much. Come on, Homer.
Alice, I never want to live through another day like this.
You know, I had a feeling all the time you didn't pay any attention to what Miss Wheeler said about the exam.
Why? I, Henry?
Oh, boy.
What's the matter?
You look through the window by the front door. Look who's out there.
Oh, boy, Homer, it's Miss Wheeler.
Henry, I'm going down to the basement.
Wait a second, Homer, you got to stay here and face her.
How do you do, Henry? How do you do, Miss Wheeler? I'm very sorry to have to bother you, but do you happen to have those examination questions you answered today?
Oh, yeah, sure. They're right here in the Cicero. Yeah, we've been sort of looking them over and realizing what a mistake we made.
Really? I don't know what that was. But when I gave them to you, I just wasn't paying attention. Did you read what was written on the back of them?
No, Miss Wheeler. We had a hard enough time reading what was on the front.
May I have them, please?
Oh, sure, here.
Thank you so much. These questions on the back are for your examination tomorrow. Goodbye.
What's that? You mean... Listen, Homer, why don't you ever pay attention to anything?
Red Cross disaster plans have always been developed on the assumption that it can happen here. This means a big volunteer job for a great many people. At the same time, it offers everyone an opportunity to be trained and ready to do a job in case of a local or national emergency. Disaster preparedness is emergency preparedness. Your help is needed. Call the Red Cross and offer your services also. And don't forget, this is Red Cross Month. Won't you be generous in your 1953 contribution to the Red Cross Fund appeal? Answer the call. Give generously. The Aldridge Family is transcribed. It's written by Clifford Goldsmith. Henry is played by Bobby Ellis and Homer by Jack Grimes. Mr. and Mrs. Aldridge are House Jameson and Barbara Robbins. Your announcer is Dick Dudley. Listen again next week, same time, same station, for another sparkling half hour with the Aldridge Family.
Good night, everybody.
Tonight, it's the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show on NBC.
That is the Aldridge Family, a broadcast from March 15th, 1953, Latin Homework, starring Bobby Ellis as Henry Aldridge, and his buddy is the Homer Brown character, was played by Jack Grimes, and then the mom and dad there were House Jameson and Barbara Robbins, Dick Dudley doing the announcing on NBC. You know, we've heard a lot of these Aldridge Family shows, and most people remember Ezra Stone as Henry Aldridge. And I've told this story before. It's kind of interesting. So I was at one of these conventions, and Curtis, I don't know if I've ever told you this story. I was at one of these conventions years ago. I'm talking like probably 30-plus years ago, and Ezra Stone was there. And I got to talk with him and have a bite to eat with him and everything. And then everybody was going to like another location for, I think, a dinner or something like that. And Jackie Kelk, who played Homer Brown, was there also. And Jackie said, "How are you getting over there, Carl?" And I said, "Well, I might go with Ezra," because Ezra said, "You can jump in my car." And Jackie Kelk said, don't go with Ezra. And I said, why? He's like, he's a really bad driver. Don't go with Ezra. You know, go get there another way. And so I did. I took his advice. And everything was fine. But years later, you know how Ezra Stone died? He drove off the road and crashed into a barrier or something like that. I know this doesn't have this doesn't have a very good ending. I know, but I'm just saying.
How old was he?
He was older. You know, he was an older
guy.
Maybe
he shouldn't have been driving anymore.
No, he shouldn't have been. You know, but
you did the right thing.
But
I say that every time I come to the radio station, I probably shouldn't be driving with you. But
oh, folks, I carpool with Lisa, and it is just an absolute.
Think of your adjective.
It's an experience.
Well, the feeling
is mutual every single time.
I agree with you.
Today she's like, don't forget to get off at Ohio.
Well, I said that.
No kidding.
Because you were in the left lane flying down. It was less
My
than a mile
doesn't
away.
Fly.
Oh, yes, it does.
No, it doesn't fly.
And I'm thinking you're just going to space it out and you'll end up, you know, in Congress or something.
You mean space out like the other day when I drove you home?
And I
was supposed to take you to the train station. She forgot she had her car at the train station. She's giving me directions to her house.
That's true.
And I'm like, are we going to your house or the train station? She's like, oh, yeah, I forgot.
But just my
car's
to my defense,
the train station.
I did forget, but the train station.
She had me
The train station is 3 minutes from my house.
I literally did
circle. I can walk to the train
all
station
around.
From my house, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
So you're being a little dramatic.
Way out of the way.
You're being very
Curtis.
Dramatic.
I need to start charging you for gas if you're going to do that.
You should.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after midnight. Thank you, David Jennings, and welcome to Sunday morning, Lisa. It is Sunday morning, September 2nd, and we have classic radio shows all the way until 2 a.m. this morning. In this hour, we have Suspense, starring Joseph Cotten from 1946, and then in hour three, it is Philo Vance, detective, starring Jackson Beck from 1949. But right now, it's time to play our game. Cat's Pride, crack the quote. What's the movie?
Strangers on a Train.
Oh, wow. That's an Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, very good.
All right.
So what do they win?
We're going to be giving away two tickets to see the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical, which is at the Royal
George
Theater.
That's a belly dance.
Yeah, you should check it out. Maybe it is. Maybe you'd like it.
I think Carl's starring in it.
The belly dance.
Yeah,
I'd have to lose a few pounds first before I do that.
No comments.
All right. So, what caller would you like?
We're going to go with caller six.
Six. All right. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Be caller six. You'll play the game on the air live with us and win tickets to Waste Watchers.
The musical.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have James on the line. Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Great. Glad you're calling in. Glad you're playing with us. The movie is Strangers on a Train, 1951. You ready to rock and roll here?
Sure.
All right. And we've got Roger here. He's a good lifeline, I think.
Okay.
All right. Let's see how it goes. Number one, I may be old-fashioned, but I thought murder was against the law. Number two, I want to commit the murder I was in prison for. Number three, to murder innocent people costs everything you are.
What do you think,
right,
James?
I'm going to need some help.
All right, Roger, you're an excellent lifeline.
Is Roger there?
He's there.
All right.
He's having trouble.
James, you want a lifeline? I can help you. Because I know it is number one.
You do?
I'm positive.
You're positive. Roger, you agree with that?
I am positive. Positive.
I don't
he's
hear.
Not, he's not. He's doing
having
his.
Trouble.
I'm
okay.
here.
Oh.
Did you hear the options or no?
No, I did not. Sorry.
All right. Well, we'll just go with Carl's lifeline and let's see how it goes.
I'll pick number one.
Well, what's James picking?
James, James,
I think she just
she hung up, dropped, but yeah. she was going to agree with you.
Okay,
so let's hear it.
All right.
I may be old-fashioned, but I thought murder was against the law.
And there you go, Carl. You were right. Roger, you were right. You weren't even listening.
I'm polishing my nails right now against my chest.
Oh, good. That's very attractive.
Must hurt, doesn't it?
And, Jane, you know what? She's a winner. She has won two tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical. It opens September 13th at
Belly Dance,
the Royal George Theater, which is an amazing theater. I love going there. So it's about food and friendship and fun. Check it out. You can book tickets at wastewatchersthemusical.com or call the Royal George box office directly at 312-988-9000. Thank you for calling in. It was a lot of fun.
All right. It is time now for suspense. This was probably, maybe not probably, I would say almost most definitely the greatest mystery series of the golden age of radio. It was on the air from 1942 until 1962, and it was billed appropriately radio's outstanding theater of thrills. They were very suspenseful stories starring the biggest names in Hollywood. Everyone wanted to be on Suspense. Cary Grant.
Suspense.
Yeah, I mean, they all wanted to be on there. Henry Fonda, Humphrey Bogart, Betty Davis, Orson Welles, Jimmy Stewart. On this particular episode, we have Joseph Cotten. This was actually his seventh radio appearance on Suspense. I mean, he did a lot of suspense stories. And this one is written by one of the masters of suspense, Lucille Fletcher. Let's go back to December 19th, 1946. Joseph Cotten stepped before the CBS radio microphone and performed the play The Thing in the Window, sponsored by Roma Wines. Here's part one now of Suspense.
Yes, Roma wines taste better because only Roma selects from the world's greatest wine reserves for your pleasure. And now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines present Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Joseph Cotten in The Thing in the Window, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those better-tasting California wines enjoyed by more Americans than any other wine. For friendly entertaining, for delightful dining. Tonight in our Suspense Theater, we bring you the premiere of the newest suspense play written by Lucille Fletcher, the author of such distinguished radio dramas as Sorry, Wrong Number, and others. But before we ring up the curtain on tonight's play and on the performance of our star, Joseph Cotten, let me make a suggestion. Why battle last-minute Christmas crowds downtown when the perfect gift is as close as your nearest wine merchant? Give magnificent Grand Estate wines, favored by discriminating wine users everywhere. From a single assorted case of Grand Estate wines, you can make several distinctive gifts and provide Grand Estate wines for your own holiday dining and entertaining, too. To give or serve, America offers no finer wines than Grand Estate. For Grand Estate wines, presented by Roma, America's greatest vintner, are limited bottlings born of choicest grapes, then slowly guided to rich taste luxury by ancient Roma skill and America's finest winemaking resources. This Christmas, for good giving, for good living, offer all five Grand Estate California wines. When entertaining, serve medium sherry, ruby port, or golden muscatel. For gracious dining, burgundy or sauterne. Say your Merry Christmas smartly with Grand Estate Wines, the crowning achievement of vintner skill. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you
Mr. Joseph Cotten as Martin Ames in The Thing in the Window, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Turn that vacuum cleaner off for a minute, will you? And come over here. I want to show you something.
Yes, sir.
Right here, out this window. Now look across the street. No, directly across, uh-huh. The opposite apartment. See that window? About three windows in from the left, with a kind of blue draperies.
Uh-huh.
There's someone sitting there in a chair. He hasn't moved all night. I think he must be dead.
Dead? Lord of mercy, Mr. Ames.
Take a good look at him and tell me what you think, Mary.
Okay, but I don't favor looking at a corpse, Mr. Ames. It's unlucky. Now, which window did you say? Third one over. Hmm. Oh, I wish I had me glasses with me.
Oh, there, right there, where my finger's pointing.
Oh. I'm afraid I don't see it yet, Mr. Ames.
Oh, look, the window with the blue draperies, he's wearing a sort of a gray suit. The arm, can't you see the arm hanging down over the side of the chair?
No, sir. But you've got good eyes, Mr. Ames. If you see it, I'm not arguing with you. What are you going to do about it?
I don't know. I just began to notice it last night. I guess I first have to be sure the man is really dead.
That's right, Mr. Ames. You don't want to get yourself into any trouble. Maybe he's only sleeping, or maybe he's incapacitated. Maybe the poor soul's a stricken invalid, huh?
Maybe.
Yes?
Hello, I'm Martin Ames. Are you the superintendent of this apartment house?
That's what it says on the door.
I've come to inquire about one of your tenants.
What is it you want to know?
I live across the street and, I'll be frank with you, sir. I've been looking out of my window across to this building now for 2.5 days and there seems to be someone dead in one of the windows.
Eh? Which window?
It's the 10th floor. I've counted up from the street and it's 10 stories up. There's a window with blue draperies about 3 windows in from the left, facing toward me, that is, and there's a man sitting there, slumped down in a chair.
Ah, just a minute. I'll get out my chart. 10th floor up from the street, huh? Well, that's really the 9th floor. The lobby counts 1. We got 2 apartments there along the front of the house. It's in the front, yeah?
That's right.
Now, 3 windows in from the left, that'd be 9B, a 4-room. That couldn't be right. 9B is 2 ladies. You say this is a man?
Yes, the face isn't clearly visible. The head slumped forward. But he's wearing a gray suit and he's sitting in a high wingback chair.
I don't place him.
Well, maybe he doesn't belong in the house. Maybe he was visiting somebody. As I say, this is all conjecture, of course. He may not be dead, but I've watched him a good deal. I'm home a lot in the daytime. My profession, the stage, doesn't take up too much of my time and... Well, it looks mighty suspicious.
Okay, I'll check on it.
Mind if I stick around?
Oh, no, sit down. I'll give 9B a ring first on the house phone.
Hello?
Oh, Miss Landis?
Yes, this is Miss Landis. Who is this?
Oh, this is Mr. Anson, the super. Everything all right up there, Miss Landis?
Everything all right? Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Okay, Miss Landis. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's that. No soap on 9B. 9A is in the country. Well, anyway, if I got the window straight, like you said, it ought to be 9B.
The 2 single ladies?
Yeah, only it couldn't be them. They're real old maids. They've been living in the house for years. Real old-fashioned type, you know. Say, if they knew you thought there was a man in that apartment, oh, the 2 of them would just about jump out of their skins. Oh.
Well, I don't know what to say. You're sure it must be that apartment?
Oh, yeah, that's the place, all right. But you probably just made a little mistake. You know how your eyes can play tricks on you? After all, it is a pretty wide street.
I don't think I made any mistake.
Anson speaking.
Oh, hello, Mr. Anson. This is Mr. Ames.
Again? It's not there.
But, Mr. Anson...
I checked up on the 2 apartments this morning. 9A is back from the country. Everybody's okay. And 9B is out walking the dog. No dead bodies in the whole place.
But I can see it. It's still there.
Okay, just where? Will you just tell me where...
In the same window. The one you said was 9B. Have you gone inside 9B?
No, but I asked them if anybody was sick or dead, and they said no.
You asked them? Well, why don't you search that apartment?
What do you mean? Break in while they're out?
No, search it while they're there. Ring the bell, walk in and do it.
Yeah, not without a search warrant from the police. These apartments, you know, don't belong to me. I just take care of the building for the company.
Then let's call the police.
Oh, not me, mister. I didn't see no dead body up there.
But I will. After all, somebody's got to do something.
Hi, I still maintain, officer, these two sisters are as refined ladies as you could find anywhere. High class, nice, church-going ladies. They used to teach school up here at PS 33.
Yeah, well, that don't mean a thing.
As it happens, there's a play on Broadway right now in which two nice old ladies commit murder after murder.
They got a dog in there. Now, will you tell me one dog that would stay for almost a week in a flat with a dead person?
I'm not telling you anything. All I know, this gentleman, Mr. Ames here, reported a stiff over here. And if he says there is one, there is. Until it's proved different. Right, Mr. Ames?
Well, I keep seeing the thing day in and day out. I'm not working at the moment and being home so much.
None of the other neighbors have complained. Dead bodies ain't exactly... Oh. It's right this way, please. I hope they're home.
If they ain't home, you got a pass key, haven't you?
Well, yeah, we're not supposed to use it, though, unless for an emergency.
This is an emergency. That dog bite?
Sometimes.
Yes? Who is it?
I'm awfully sorry, Miss Landis, but there's been some kind of mix-up. These two gentlemen want to look over your apartment.
But why? It's not for rent.
Well, I know. It's just, they want to search around and check up
on... Come on. Cut out the palaver. Hey, look, lady. A dead body's been reported sitting in one of your windows.
What?
Yeah. This guy lives across the street, and he's been seeing it over here for a week.
Oh, come on now.
Open up.
A dead body... Oh, but that's impossible. My sister and I live here all alone.
Yeah. We know all about it.
Excuse me a minute. I'll call my sister. Bingham?
Oh, come on.
Bingham! It's the police.
Hey, look, lady, I'm not standing out here all day. Come on, give me the passkey, Anson.
It won't do no good. They got a chain on the door from the inside.
Open up in the name of the law.
How do you do? I am Vivian Landis. May I ask what this is all about, please?
Certainly, lady. I got a search warrant here made out by this gentleman to search your place. He says you got a dead body in there.
A dead body? Why, that's perfectly ridiculous.
Yeah, isn't it? But it's been reported. And kindly take that door off the chain and let us through.
Of course. First, may I ask, how did this peeping Tom see into our apartment? I thought, Mr. Anson, that we were quite private.
Well, you see... Look, he lives across the street on the same level.
I just happened to be...
Oh, well... Then we shall have to keep our shades down in the future. Although one would think a grown man would have something better to do. Do come right in, gentlemen. Make yourselves right at home.
Thanks.
Is he coming in here too, Mr. Busybody?
No, he doesn't have to if you don't want him.
Well, I most definitely don't.
Okay, Mr. Ames, you better stay outside.
Officer, I will...
Oh, he does want to poke around in our private rooms, is that it? Maybe he had some ulterior motive in worming his way in. Maybe he's come to get the lay of the land, and so he can break in someday to rob us.
Okay, he's not coming in. Now, let's take a look at your window. Hey, Ames.
Yes, officer.
Now, what's the big idea?
You didn't find it?
No.
That's very strange.
Yeah? The only thing strange about it's your eyesight. You want to get your glasses changed.
There wasn't anything in 9B?
No.
I don't understand it. How could I have seen it so distinctly and it not there? But perhaps it isn't in the window now. Perhaps they hid it while we were waiting outside the door.
Hid it? Now, where do you hide a dead body in a four-room flat? I looked in all the clothes closets, under the sofas, in the chests.
Perhaps they got it out at the back, into the service elevator.
Single-handed? With all the garbage cans and laundry going up and down?
Perhaps they had accomplices, Pratt. Oh, you probably think... Oh, it's so terrible to keep seeing it and feeling it slowly decaying there in secret. Why, the thing could be there for weeks. It's so high above the streets. Perhaps it'll never be found, but perhaps it's already being destroyed.
Well, then, if it's gone, what do you got to worry about? You don't have to sit and look at it no more.
No, I hope it is. I tell you, it's really getting me down. I haven't slept for nights keeping vigil. I'm in a nervous state. I haven't been this nervous in years.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, look, why don't you try forgetting it for a while, huh? Try not to look over into that window. Or go away for a change. You've done what you could, Mr. Ames. If there is a stiff over there, well, that's my business, ain't it? And if there isn't...
You mean you think I'm... I may be...
I'm not saying nothing, Mr. Ames. But if I was you, I'd try catching up on my night's sleep.
All right, that's the first portion of Suspense with The Thing in the Window, starring Joseph Cotton, and that's heard on CBS, sponsored by Lisa's favorite beverage, Roma Wines. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Thanks, Roger. All right. We're listening to a really cool episode of Suspense. This is called The Thing in the Window, starring Joseph Cotten from 1946. Here is the conclusion.
Miss Landis, I'm sorry to disturb you at this time of night, but I really... I'm desperate. I haven't anywhere else to turn.
What? Who is this?
This is Mr. Ames, Martin Ames, your neighbor, the one across the street. I was in your apartment yesterday morning with the police, or... rather, I was almost in your apartment. Your sister wouldn't let me in.
Oh!
Now, please don't take me a pest, Miss Landis. I don't mean to annoy you. It was only because I was so desperate that I initiated that search.
It's quite all right. Goodbye.
No, please don't hang up, because... it's worse now than it ever was. Miss Landis, I've been sitting here opposite your apartment, staring into your windows, and I'm only asking you to help me, Miss Landis. Help me just a little.
Help you?
It's still there, Miss Landis.
What is still there?
The dead body in your window.
Oh, but there isn't. How dare you? When the police...
I know. I know now it hasn't anything to do with you. But would you do me just one favor, Miss Landis? Would you go into your living room and just check once more?
Oh, I won't. I'll do nothing of the kind. You're out of your mind.
Oh, perhaps no. I am, Miss Landis. That's what I'm trying to find out. Then perhaps your sister Vivian would help me.
She's not at home.
Oh, Lord.
And anyway, I don't see how you can see in. I pulled the shades down in there yesterday morning.
I know. They're all down still.
Well, then how can you see?
I can't. At least not the actual body. It's just a silhouette. I'm not maligning you or your sister, Miss Landis. If there's someone dead in there, it's not you who are doing it. But think of me. If you could just be here and look over there and see the shadow of those quiet fingers, and that shoulder, and that head.
Oh, please! Stop it! Stop it! It's not here! It isn't!
Tell me just one thing, Miss Landis. There is a chair by that window, though, isn't there?
Yes, there's a chair.
A high-backed wing chair.
Mm-hmm.
And have you anything on it? Anything piled up? I mean, like curtains or cushions or dressmaker's dummy or...
Oh, of course not.
Or do you have a plant in the window in front of it? Some kind of a odd table? Anything? Anything that would cast a shadow like a man's head slumped forward or an arm hanging limp?
No. There's nothing. Nothing but the chair.
Then would you do me just one more favor, Miss Landis? Please, please, and as an experiment, would you just go into the living room and move that chair from the window, please?
If I do it, will you stop pestering us?
Yes.
Will you let us alone forever?
Yes, if it works.
If it works? What do you mean?
I can't tell, Miss Landis, until you move the chair.
Oh, all right. All right. Hello?
Yes.
I moved it away from the window. It's at the other end of the room, and there's nothing in it. It's empty.
Oh, I see. Well, thanks very much, Miss Landis. I know what I have to do now.
You mean?
Yes, Miss Landis. It's still there. Miss Landis.
Where is it? I want to see it at once.
Oh, yes, Miss Landis, come in. I hope you'll excuse my appearance. I've just passed another sleepless night.
So has my sister, and so have I. What do you mean by all this business, Mr. Ames? You have frightened my poor sister nearly to death.
Why?
Seeing things that aren't there when you know that they're not.
I know they're not. Oh, I wish there weren't. I wish to heaven I'd never looked out that window. I wish those walls were solid stone and your walls... Oh.
You are a sick man, Mr. Ames.
Oh, am I? I wish I were, but I'm perfectly sane and well. I went to a psychiatrist yesterday, and guess what he told me? That there's nothing wrong with me, nothing.
I can't believe that.
Oh, to you, I suppose it's a form of madness to persist and persist in seeing this hideous image. But not to me, Miss Landis. No. I finally come to an entirely different conclusion.
And what is that?
The supernatural.
The supernatural? A ghost? What nonsense, Mr. Ames.
Yes, I suppose it is nonsense to you. You've been a school teacher.
Yes.
You believe in logic and common sense, the things that give a pretense of solidity to this frail little life of ours. But I'm an artist. I've always had a feeling for the thing beyond, the intangible, the shadowy. We're children, Miss Landis. Children playing along the edge of the ocean. We laugh and toy with the waves and mock fright. But sometime one of us slips down into the darkness. Sometimes the depths rise and we glimpse the yawning fangs of the eternal.
Well, you put things rather oddly, Mr. Ames. Just exactly what do you mean?
Simply this. I checked on that building with the real estate agents yesterday afternoon after I left my psychiatrist, and there was a murder.
In our apartment?
Well, the report didn't say. You know how they try to hush those things up, but it was a man, a young man, the lover of one of the tenants, a Miss Sweetser.
Sweetser?
Hmm.
Why, that's the name of the people who lived there before us.
Oh.
But they were an elderly couple, Mr. and Mrs. Sweetser. I never saw any Miss Sweetser.
She died. She was the daughter. She killed herself afterwards by jumping out one of the windows.
Oh, perfectly awful.
It's rather a ghastly coincidence, isn't it?
Was it out our window?
Who knows? She must have been a very neurotic person, though, this Miss Sweetser, half-crazed almost with love or jealousy. I checked on the details in an old newspaper.
Oh.
She cut his throat, nearly decapitated him.
Oh, good mercy.
And it said that when they lifted his body out of the chair later, his head almost rolled.
Excuse me. Mr. Ames, I'd rather not hear. I still can't believe if there is something, if there could possibly be something, why haven't we seen it too? Why should you
haven't you seen it, Miss Landis?
No!
You sure? Never? Perhaps in the middle of the night, getting up and passing that room, seeing that chair outlined against the window, just in passing, perhaps? You've never had a glimpse?
No. I really must be going.
No. Please stay and look at it. I want you to see it out of my window.
My sister Elaine, she's very nervous, Mr. I can't leave her so long alone.
Then how will I know? How? Well, Miss Landis, I thought you came here especially. It'll only take a minute.
Look,
it's right in here in the bedroom. I just have to let up the Venetian blind. Oh, Miss Landis, don't go. Miss Landis. Hello. Oh, hello, Sergeant. This is Ames, Martin Ames. I just called to let you know. I think you're right about that good night's sleep. Yes, I'm going away tomorrow for a long rest, shutting up my apartment. Yes, I'm all tied up in knots. I don't know what to think. Oh, they did. Yes, I saw the moving van in front of the house, but I didn't know it was those sisters. Couldn't take it, huh? Well, I can't take it much longer myself.
Whoa, Marty! Bravo, bravissimo, old boy.
Shh, not so loud.
Why all the mystery?
The superintendent doesn't like me.
I should think he wouldn't like you grabbing this beautiful apartment right from under his nose. He probably had it promised to a friend.
But you've got it now, Ronald, just as I said.
Oh, so I have, old boy, so I have. And it's beautiful. You know I'm crazy about it. Marty, you've outdone yourself. You've been more than generous.
I think nothing of it, Ronald. I'm glad to do it for such a distinguished colleague.
Well, it certainly was nice of you. And I wish I could do something in return, Marty. I really do.
Oh, no.
Perhaps that play I'm doing next season. You know, there's a part in it, a rather small part, but very necessary.
Oh, thanks, just the same. But I'm doing pretty well just now, Ronald.
Well, I don't know how you found it, Marty. in this housing shortage. You know, why even the superintendent didn't know it was for rent. When your call came to my manager, I left rehearsal. I wouldn't trust it to anyone but myself. I left the whole cast just standing there when I came over. And when I asked this gloomy character, Anson, he said he'd heard nothing about it. So I insisted, of course. I told him who I was. Finally, he called up. Sure enough, it seems these two sisters who lived here just decided to move out.
Really? Well, say, I hope you didn't mention my name, though. If Anson known it, I'd tipped you off.
Oh, no. You asked me not to. Anyway, I think my own name was enough. Seriously, Marty, how did you know? Were they friends of yours?
Oh, no. It's a rather long story. Here, let us sit down, shall we, in the living room. No. You take the chair. I guess they must have left that when they moved out.
Oh, thank you.
Well, to be frank, Ronald, I got this apartment by a ruse.
A ruse, Marty? What kind of ruse?
Oh, pretty nasty one. I frightened the last tenants away. I told them I saw a dead man sitting here in this window.
No, not really. Yeah. How clever of you. Of course there was.
Oh, no. You see, I live across the street, directly across, in that apartment there with the striped curtains.
Oh?
One night, just sitting there late, I got an amusing thought. There was a kind of shadow across this chair, the one there that you're sitting in. It reminded me a little bit of a corpse. And it came to me that it might be fun to create a great part, a character, a corpse that wasn't there.
Well, I don't follow you. Quite.
Some actors need a play, Ronald, to create a role. Others, the great ones, work out their own dramas. I proceeded to invent a part for myself. I was the eyewitness, the innocent bystander across the street, who saw a corpse in here, and I kept seeing it and kept seeing it, and finally, by the power of suggestion, it became real enough to frighten them away.
It's very clever. Wasn't it rather drastic?
I'd always hoped we'd be neighbors, Ronald. As a matter of fact, the whole idea for this thing came to me that day in October when you turned me down for that part outside of Sardi's, remember? You said you were looking to replace then.
Did I?
Oh, yes. It was then I thought how nice it would be to see you right across the street, sitting in this window. I simply had to bring it about.
Well, I have...
No, Ronald, don't get up yet. I'm not through.
Is it really, boy? I'm afraid the gang at the theater, you know, they don't even know that I'm here.
They'll wait. People always wait for you, don't they, Ronald? I could call them for you, of course, but the phone's been disconnected.
Well, I'm afraid that I'm... which way's the door, old boy? Really, Marty, it's been very kind
What's
of
the
you.
Matter? Don't you like the apartment, Ronald? Aren't you going to take it? After all my work?
Oh, yes, I like it very much. The door's locked.
Yes, Ronald. I'm afraid you'll have to find your way out alone. There. That'll keep you quiet. Silence always became you better than all that ranting and glibness and charm, Ronald. And now I've got the part for you. A part to end all parts. You play it entirely in a chair. There isn't much action, not a line to say. You just sit, Ronald. You sit in this chair by the window. Yeah. It'll be the greatest performance of your career. You liked to hog all the fattest roles for yourself, didn't you? Well, this is a part that's been talked about up and down this street for weeks. You'll play the part of a ghost. A corpse that never was. A hallucination in my brain. And who'll be your audience? I will. I, the insignificant outmoded ham who wasn't fit to appear in your precious plays, but good enough to put you here, Ronald. Who's the better actor now, Ronald? Goodbye, Ronald. See you across the street.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, Roma, America's favorite wine. And now this is Ken Niles with a curtain call for the star of tonight's play, that perennial suspense favorite, Joseph Cotton. Joe, tonight marks your 7th appearance on Suspense in less than 3 years, making you our all-time champion guest.
No cotton shortage on Suspense, Ken.
And no shortage of suspense when cotton's on hand either.
In appreciation of those seven stellar performances, here's a Christmas present for you, Joe. Please accept this gift basket of Grand Estate wines from your host, Roma, America's greatest vendor.
Thank you, Ken. One more thing. What about next Thursday's show?
Well, it's a double threat show, with the honors going to two distinguished ladies. It's called Philomel Cottage. The author is England's number one feminine mistress of the art of suspense, Agatha Christie. And our star will be the most provocative European leading lady to visit our shores in many a moon, Miss Lily Palmer.
Well, I've never missed a suspense show yet, and certainly next week sounds even more intriguing than usual. Good night.
Good night, Joe. We're all looking forward to seeing you and David O. Selznick's production, Duel in the Sun.
Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Miss Lily Palmer as star of Suspense.
Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Stay tuned for the thrilling adventures of the FBI in Peace and War, following immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I just love the music on Suspense. You know, it's really suspenseful.
Right. You've used that word quite a few times in describing suspense.
Well.
So it's best sum it up perfectly.
They called him Joe on there.
I heard
Joseph
that.
Cotton. They call him, hey, Joe. Yeah, we call him Joseph Cotton, and they called him Joe.
Well, they're on a personal basis.
Yeah, they're on more on a one-to-one
like
basis.
Like I call you
them.
Car.
Yeah, hey, car.
Same thing.
Hey, and I call you, hey, Lise.
Car.
That was Suspense with A Thing in the Window from December 19th, 1946. A great cast of characters in there. You heard Jerry Hausner, Jeanette Nolan, also Hans Conried, Kathy Lewis, Joseph Kearns. You know, these
you
are
said
all.
That already.
No, I said Joseph. Did I say Joseph Kearns? I don't think so. We'll play it back. We'll have Curtis.
This is like
Coke.
The time when you forgot my name or you called me Chris.
Yeah, I called you Curtis.
Yeah, he said Chris.
And everybody thought I said
the tape.
Chris.
We got the tape.
Chris. We got the Chris. It says Chris. Chris.
We posted it on
Curtis. Yeah. Curtis. that was sponsored by Lisa's favorite potent potable.
Roma Wines.
Yeah, Roma Wines.
My
it's heard on CBS. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. Well, I want to tell everyone about our Classic Radio Club. We have been talking about this for a few weeks, and people have been signing up like crazy. And if you haven't signed up yet, you should, folks, because this is going to be a lot of fun. The very first time you sign up to the Classic Radio Club, you will get a 5-CD, 10 Classic Radio Show collection, regularly priced at $39.95 for only $4.99 plus shipping and handling. And if you want to see the collection, just go to ClassicRadioClub.com, ClassicRadioClub.com. Now, each month, I will hand select 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time from my library of over 100,000 shows, and I will send them to you on 5 CDs. Now, these are not burned CDs. These are actual replicated CDs, just like you'd buy in a store, and they're in a collector case. Plus, I'm writing very copious liner notes about each one of these shows so you can learn about the programs while you're enjoying listening to them. And I promise that these radio shows you get each and every month, 10 shows every month on 5 CDs, will be the best sound quality shows you've ever heard. They are going to sound like the shows we air on the air here. And don't forget, when we air shows here, we sometimes have to edit out the original commercials and things like that. Not at the club. With the club, you will get the shows as originally broadcast back in the 1940s, 50s. So just log on to ClassicRadioClub.com. We will rush you your first 5-CD collection with 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time, regularly priced at $39.95, only $4.99. And 10 shows every single month. You will never get a duplicate show because putting it in a spreadsheet, making sure that when I pick out these 10 shows every month, you get brand new episodes. Now, the very first time you join, You will get Abbott and Costello, including the famous Who's On First routine, Sam Spade Detective, Dimension X, Escape, Fibber McGee and Molly, Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, Inner Sanctum, Jack Benny, and Suspense. So you get 10 of the greatest radio shows of all time. And the Suspense episode you get is the most famous Suspense story, Sorry Wrong Number, starring Agnes Moorehead. So just go to ClassicRadioClub.com. Log on to ClassicRadioClub.com. Learn all about it. Now, the very first time, as I said, it's only $4.99. Then after that, every month after that, unless you cancel, it's $14.99. But you can cancel at any time. If you're not happy with what you're getting for $14.99, you can cancel at any time. But I promise you, you're going to love being part of the Classic Radio Club. Just go to ClassicRadioClub.com. And you can call a toll-free number as well. It's 888-642-6556. Once again, 888-642-6556. And an operator will help you. Yes, Lisa?
Nothing. I have.
Oh, you got to sneeze? Oh, Lisa has to sneeze.
Oh, good.
God bless you, Lisa.
Thank you, Carl.
Okay, what are we doing in our next hour?
Oh, we're going to play a little Philo Vance Detective.
Philo Vance. And what happens when we come back tonight at 11 p.m.?
Oh, we're going to have a few more shows. I sure do. We've got Fibber McGee and Molly and Jeff Regan Investigator. Oh, two more great shows.
A comedy tonight. And then a detective.
Right.
Very cool. Well, we never did replace our game. We were going to do like some kind of a game.
I know.
I had a good game. A lot of people liked it.
It's called, you have a game? It's called
I had a
Four Hot Dogs?
Yeah, Four Hot Dogs.
That's the name of the
four
game?
Four Hot Dogs and two aspirin.
And two, and some Alka-Seltzer to boot.
Some Pepto-Bismol.
Pellegrino.
Pepto-Bismol.
Roger says, I'm not feeling that
good.
Not
Pepto-Bismol.
Roger said, Roger like a few minutes ago goes, I'm not feeling too good. I said, why? What'd you eat today? Well, four hot dogs.
But it had gluten-free buns, so it's okay. You know, I have these memories.
Four hot dogs.
I have memories of a child of having to take Pepto-Bismol on a big spoon, that big pink liquid stuff.
See, when you grow up, you can just guzzle it.
When you grow up, you can take the tablets.
Well, yeah, but
right?
That's no
you don't
fun.
Have to take the pink liquid.
Remember
the
old commercials,
stuff.
Roger?
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz.
Remember
that's
these?
That's Alka-Seltzer.
No, remember this commercial? Bromo-Seltzer, 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 Bromo-Seltzer.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me.
Bromo-Seltzer doesn't work?
No, I need the Alka-Seltzer.
What works? Alka-Seltzer?
Alka-Seltzer, yeah.
Maybe either that or maybe
plop,
no more
plop,
hot
fizz,
dogs.
Fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
Now, don't you feel like you never want to eat a hot dog ever again?
No.
You don't feel like
I still got a couple at home.
Still got a couple at home.
There's still lunch
tomorrow.
Tomorrow we'll have the
you'll
other.
You'll be good by then.
The rest of the hot dogs in the package you'll have tomorrow.
Yeah, you know what? You know what I should say? It's here's another commercial for you, Carl. Mm. All right. I can't believe I ate the
whole thing.
That's a great commercial.
Yeah. What was that again? What was this? What was the product?
Again.
Wasn't that? I think that was Alka-Seltzer.
I think it was.
Yeah, we were sitting at the table.
I literally studied that commercial in school.
Spicy meatball.
Yep. That's a spicy meatball.
Yes, I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Was it Alka-Seltzer?
I think it was.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Well, you learned something.
All right. In our next hour, Philo Vance Detective. Don't miss that. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is exactly 1 o'clock in the morning. Time for the news. Here's Roger Badish.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater, and thanks for staying up late with us. And it is 1:08 in the morning. It's Sunday morning. We will be here till 2 a.m. Then Michael Heidemann's coming in here, right?
He sure is. We're going to do a little crosstalk. And I know he's been posting on Facebook about promoting some new music groups with his music interludes. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to seeing Michael. He was at the WGN meet and greet. That was a lot of fun. Saw him there. And did he get up there? Was he up there singing?
I didn't see him do
like
that.
Like we were singing.
I think we hogged it. I don't think there was time for much else.
You know,
many other
I think
people.
He sang one or two songs, but he definitely was in the vicinity of the karaoke.
Here's the thing. When I'm up there singing with Lisa, and you do a very good job, Lisa. Lisa has a very good voice.
Uh-huh.
I'm up there singing It's Still Rock and Roll to Me. And to me, I'm sounding great.
I bet.
You know?
And then I played
it back for
you just now.
I'm like saying to myself, I am rocking this. People are cheering. And then I just listened to it. Oh, my goodness.
That's why we video.
I'm even better than I thought.
Right. You were really right on. I should post that video. Would you want me to?
What happened to my special?
Can I post that video, Carl?
What happened?
What? You're not listening to me.
He's looking for his
brunch. I don't have my special effect. What?
Can I post that video?
Is this a special
effect? Do you have a problem?
Effect?
He's not listening to me.
No, that's not a special
effect. All right, we'll just wait.
Oh, gosh. What is that?
No, hey, baby. Why would you?
Whoa. No, that's not it either.
Carl?
What?
Can I
hello?
Hello?
What?
Can I post that video of you singing
no,
that?
No, it's so bad.
Okay,
it's
it so would be bad. A lot of fun, though.
The three fans that I have, I would lose.
Right.
You know
well,
why
your
everyone
mom
was,
will
you
still
know why
be
everyone
your fan.
Was cheering?
I don't even think my mom would continue to be my fan if she heard how
you
badly
might be right
I sang.
Well, if
that.
You give her the earplug, she'd be fine.
Oh, gosh. How can I possibly sound that bad?
It's easy.
And that be off, like, key, that...
Karaoke is actually difficult.
But I'm hearing it myself, and I'm like going, yeah, I'm rocking this. I'm doing good. And then it was, oh.
I think it was all about the dark sunglasses. You felt pretty
I did.
Cool.
I had the...
The Walter E. Smith.
Walter
we
E. Smith.
Walter E. Smith sunglasses.
The Walter E. Smith group were in here, and I'll tell you what. There's some furniture in here by Walter
gorgeous.
E. Smith. It is unbelievable. I want that furniture. And I'm not going to come in here with some moving people. I'm going to buy my own.
You should.
Walter E. Smith has great furniture. You see that Chase lounge in there? Wow, that's nice. That would fit perfectly at my place.
I'm sure.
Exact color, everything. And real nice people, too.
Yeah.
Walter E. Smith. They have a lot of locations. I'm going to go in there and just... buy some stuff.
Great. Take some photos.
All right. In this hour, we have Philo Vance Detective coming your way in the Red Duck Murder Case, starring Jackson Beck from 1949. But first, we're going to play our game, Cats, Pride, Crack the Quote. What is the movie?
12 Monkeys.
That had...
1995. It was Bruce Willis. And,
oh, it was Bruce Willis,
Brad
right.
Brad Pitt, I
yeah.
think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if Brad Pitt was in that.
I think
was
so.
Was he? Okay.
I think so.
All right. Well, what do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see Waste Watchers, the musical at the Royal George Theater.
Waste Watchers, the belly dance.
Exactly.
At the
That's
Royal
the
Joy,
one. Yes.
George Theater. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take
425.
425th
call. You're killing me.
Or how about three. Caller three.
All right, caller three. Call right now and play the game. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hey, Mac.
Yes.
How are you?
Great, great. How you guys doing? I really enjoy your show.
Hi, Mac.
So good. So glad you made it through.
I'm good, buddy. How are you? And Mac likes the show, so thank you so much.
I really do. I enjoy it. I try to listen to it every night when I'm doing my work.
Awesome.
Well, great. We'll do a little crack the quote.
Okay.
Maybe turn your radio down. I think it's a little bit echoey.
No, I don't think that is.
You don't think it's the radio?
No, we have that problem on the phone a lot.
All right. Well, we'll just go ahead. The movie is 12 Monkeys with Bruce Willis and we think Brad Pitt. Here we go. Number one, reality doesn't impress me. Number two, when ordinary...
Nothing much does
impress
you,
me?
Lisa.
Are you kidding?
You're tough to impress. Oh,
everything impresses me. Number two, when ordinary life shackles me, I escape one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, you want to escape, right? That's very sane.
What do you think, Mac?
I say one. I like one. I like two, but I like one.
All right. Roger, where are you with this?
I'm going with our caller. I'm going one.
You like one.
No, it's not. It's,
I love when Carl says no.
It's either two or three. I'm going to go with two.
Number two, when ordinary life shackles me.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it.
Of course not. You want to escape, right? That's very sane. That's
number
very
three.
Sane.
Oh,
there
man.
We go. So close. You guys were so close. We had a one and a two. It was three, but that's okay. Because you know what, Mac? You are the winner here. You have won a pair of tickets for the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical. I guarantee there's no belly dancing. It opens September 13th at the Royal George Theater. Check it out at wastewatchersthemusical.com or you can call the Royal George box office at 312-988-9000.
The what office?
The box office.
Oh.
But you know what? I haven't seen the show yet. It hasn't opened, but Royal George Theater is amazing. They do great stuff there. So I assume this will be great just as well. So thank you so much for playing.
Mac. Thank you, guys. You ladies and guys, excuse me. God bless you now.
God bless you, buddy. Mac is a big winner. He's going to go see a belly dance over at the Royal George Theater.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that.
Well, I can hook you up, Carl. But first, you have to get the questions right. And you have not gotten either of the anything right.
I mean, here's the thing.
I don't think you've gotten any of them
Curtis,
right tonight.
No, I got one right. Second one. Second hour. Curtis, here's the thing. This play at Royal George is all about like four women in a gymnasium, right?
Okay.
And they're like talking about life and all. How come I didn't know about the audition to play like the gymnasium teacher in that play? I would have went out for that play.
How do you know it's a male?
Well, I'm just saying. Well,
Carl, we were just talking about your music abilities. This is a musical.
Oh, it's a oh, it is? It's a musical.
It sure is. See, you weren't really listening. It's not a belly dance show. It is a musical.
Oh.
But if it wasn't a musical, I'm pretty darn sure they would have reached out to you.
Right. All right.
So, as they opened the door so you could leave.
At the exit. They would have reached out to you.
Hang on a second. Let me see. Let me see if this works. Hang on. You know what?
You're welcome.
Aubrey is the best engineer in the world. My rim shot was not working. He came in here. He did one thing, and it was like, and now it's working.
There you go.
The guy has the magic. He has a magic touch.
Yeah.
He's the magic touch.
He's the magician around
here. He is a magician. All right. Thanks, Aubrey. Okay. It is time now for Philo Vance Detective. Now, this was a great detective series. Jackson Beck starred as Philo Vance. Prior to him, though, Jose Ferrer played the character just for like a year. Then Jackson Beck took it over and was really Philo Vance on the air for the longest. It was created by S.S. Van Dyne. That's a cool name, S.S. Van Dyne. I think I'm going to change my name to
that. Like the S.S. Minnow?
Yeah, the S.S. Van Dyne. Philo Vance was a very popular character in books, movies, radio. He was a stylish, like highly intelligent, cultured private eye.
A lot like you.
Yes, he was an Americanized Sherlock Holmes working out of New York City. And his secretary's name was Ellen Deering. And that role was played by Joan Alexander. Now, Joan Alexander played Lois Lane on The Adventures of Superman for many years. And Jackson Beck, who you will hear as Philo Vance, was the long-running announcer on The Adventures of Superman. He was the guy, now The Adventures of Superman. He had even deeper than that he was able to do it, Lisa.
I bet.
With his regular voice. All right, let's go back now to a broadcast date of May 31st, 1949. This is called the Red Duck Murder Case. Here's part one of Philo Vance.
Stop twirling that keychain. You're making me nervous.
Easy, Joe. You're blowing your top, kid.
Don't call me kid. Now, look, Eddie, I'm trying to be calm. Trying to be calm ain't easy with a guy like you. Now, tell me what happened and tell me fast.
Solid. Nothing to get excited about, kid.
Don't call me kid. Now, look, I'm your boss, Joe D'Angelo. You call me Mr. D'Angelo or Joe. But you don't call me kid. You get that?
Okay, kid.
What?
You want a report? Here it is. I passed two of the $100 bills you're making in competition with the government. No trouble. You like that?
Two of them, huh? And it's good. Where?
One of them I got rid of down at the restaurant on Green Street. No trouble.
Uh-huh.
The other I got rid of at the haberdashery. Guy looks the bill over good, and he gives me the change as nice as you please. We're in business, Joe.
You bet your life we are. Only this local stuff is small time, see? Tell you what I want to do now, Eddie.
Yeah?
I want you to make contacts in different cities. Sell them the counterfeit bills I make. And you do it.
Natch. Push over. What do you want for them?
25%. I want 25 bucks of good dough for every $100 phony. Can you get it?
I'm gonna get more than that, kid. I'm getting 30 bucks instead of 25.
Okay, I could use the other five.
Yeah, maybe you can, kid. The other five goes to me. That's my commission.
Don't start anything, Eddie. Remember now, you just work for me. You do like I tell you.
Yeah, who takes the risks of passing a queer? You? No, me. And I'll get what I can for you here. Don't you forget, the FBI would like to know what you're doing. Now that that's settled, I think...
Wait a minute. Georgie! Georgie, come in here!
Hey, what is this?
We'll find out. Come in, Georgie.
Really, Mr. D'Angelo, I wish you wouldn't scream my name. It's disturbing. Well, what is it you want?
Georgie, Eddie here is getting ambitious.
Might have expected something like that from him. Look at what he's wearing. The suit coat is 3 inches too long. That keychain is in horrible taste. And the color of that suit, midnight blue.
Hey, what is this, a lesson in what I should wear? What do you want with Georgie, Joe?
You'll find out. Georgie, you're a good boy. So I'm going to let you have some fun. Right now.
Let go of my arm. Joe. Hey, Mr. D'Angelo, let go, will
Georgie,
you?
Georgie, I can't hold this character all day.
Hey, Joe, let me go, will you?
Is that it?
Of course
Joe.
I have. Right all here. Right.
Joe, let
I'm
me go.
Ready to use it.
Joe, no!
Done, Mr. D'Angelo. You won't have any trouble at all from him from now on. Oh, dear.
What's the matter, Georgie?
Oh, nothing. It's all right. I thought for a moment I'd gotten a bit of lint from his shirt on my suit.
But, Mr. Markham, my boy is gone. And he was a good boy, Mr. Markham.
I'm sure he was, Mrs. Macon, but there isn't anything I can do.
Oh, you can't.
I'm district attorney. You want the police department, Bureau of Missing Persons.
No, no.
I'll get them on the phone for you.
No. It is not them I want. You and your friend Philo Vance, I hear about
Mrs.
you.
Mrs. Macon,
I read about the two of you, and now my Eddie is missing. You can find him, Mr. Markham. He's a good boy.
Well, if it'll help you any to tell me about him, Mrs. Macon, go right ahead. I'll turn the information over to the proper authorities.
Mr. Markham, last night, Eddie, he does not come home. Always he comes home. Every night. Last night, he does not come home. 3 weeks ago, he quit his job. It's a good job, Mr. Markham. He was a shipping clerk.
Go ahead, Mrs. Macon.
After he leave that job, he have more money than when he work. I said to him, Eddie, I said, where you get this money? But they won't tell me. And now he's gone. Something has happened to him, Mr. Markham. You have got to find out where and what it is. You and Mr. Vance.
I hardly think this is a matter for Vance, Mrs. Macon, but I can promise you this. I have a description of your son.
Yes.
And the photograph you brought me.
Yes.
I'll do what I can to find him. You can depend on that. I'll do what I can.
Again, you're filing your nails, always filing your nails. Put that file away, Georgie.
Certainly, Mr. D'Angelo. You sound upset. There's something wrong.
That kid. That Eddie Macon we knocked off.
Mm-hmm. We don't need him, I assure you. I'm quite capable of passing all the counterfeit bills you make, and of making connections to have them passed in other cities. So, why worry about him?
Oh, yeah? Suppose they find his body. Suppose they trace it back to us, then what?
My dear Mr. D'Angelo, don't be ridiculous. First of all, they'll never find his body. It's down at the bottom of the lake, very carefully weighed with a very heavy stone. Second of all, even if they did find it, there is nothing that will lead the police to us. Absolutely nothing. What are you going to do now?
I'm going to work on this press. Might as well get some of those bills moving, in case we have to blow town in a hurry.
Ridiculous. We'll be here as long as we'd like. See you later.
Where are you going?
Out of here. I simply won't be able to stand the sound of that printing machine.
Beautiful drive, Vance.
Thank you, Markham. Beautiful drive, beautiful day for golf. What more could a man want?
What's wrong with a beautiful dame? That wouldn't hurt me.
A caddy has something there, Vance.
Yes, he has. But a beautiful girl might lead to trouble. And this is no day for trouble.
I'll get out of your ball, Mr. Vance. I'll be there by the time Mr. Markham shoots.
I hope I hit one long enough so that I have to really walk for it. I need the exercise. Well, here goes.
Well, not bad, my friend. It's right up there with mine. Come on, let's go.
Right. Oh, by the way, Vance, there was a woman in my office to see me this morning.
Uh-oh.
Quite an old woman. Her son had disappeared. From what I gathered, he was a good boy who met a wrong crowd. She was terribly worried.
That's one of the things you can always depend upon a mother to do. Worry. Did you turn it over to the Missing Persons Bureau?
Yes, but they haven't uncovered anything. Oh, well, I don't imagine we should concern ourselves with it. After all, it is a beautiful day. Wonder where my shot landed.
Our caddy is standing down the fairway a bit. One of us is there, no doubt. Probably both of us. Both shots were headed in the same direction.
We'll see.
Oh, by the way, Vance, this is a course you've never played before. There's a stream running through the fairway about 300 yards from the tee. That should be about 100 yards from where our shot landed.
Water hazard in the middle of the course, eh? Definitely unfair.
Natural hazard, I believe. But a good brassy shot will carry it over onto the green. Well, here we are.
And both together, as I imagined. Boy, brassy, please.
Yes, sir, here you are.
Thank you.
There's water about 100 yards down, sir.
So Mr. Markham was telling me.
Water comes from Lake Ralph. We go ice skating there in the wintertime. Boy, fun.
So I'd imagine. Swimming in summer, skating in winter.
Oh, not much swimming, Mr. Vance. Couple of boats and ducks in the lake all the time. Funniest ducks you ever saw.
What's funny about them?
Well, this morning I seen them on my way here. They got red feet.
Red feet, eh?
Yeah.
That is strange. Well, here goes a try with this brassy. Hope I get enough carry with it.
I'm betting on you.
Well, thanks for your confidence. It goes.
A beauty, Vance. Now, if I can only duplicate that shot.
If I were you, I would, Markham. Principally because this is the last hole we'll have time to play.
Nonsense. We're playing all day.
I don't think you'll want to play after what I have to tell you.
Oh, what is it, Vance?
You see, in the event that the missing Eddie Macon was stabbed, I think I know where his body is.
Well, Vance, the police diver found Eddie Macon's body at the bottom of Lake Ralph, and it'll be brought to the surface any minute now. But how did you know it would be there?
The clue of the red ducks, Markham. Remember what the caddy told us? The only thing that would account for red feet on ducks would be blood in the water. And blood in the water could come from a body if it had been stabbed.
Wait a minute, Vance, please. If there were blood on the water, it would have been noticed, wouldn't it?
Certainly. But the blood became dissipated in and by the water, Markham. Only before it had, the ducks swam over the spot where the body was located, got blood on their feet, and then went on land.
I'm enjoying this, Vance. You're even able to trace the movements of ducks. What a man.
Well, it's reasonably simple. On land, the water from the ducks' feet would dry, but the blood would cake and be retained in the webbing.
I suppose that's right. In fact, I know it's right now. Now, we've got men going all through those bushes on shore here looking for some tie-up with the crime.
I hope they find something. Merely getting the body will tell us nothing, I'm afraid. I'm going to enjoy working on this case even more than I usually enjoy working on a murder case.
Why? Because the killers spoiled our golf game?
Yes, that and the fact that we're not going to have very much to work with, if anything.
You're a strange man, Vance. The tougher the problem, the greater pleasure for you. Most of the time, it's the other way. Well, that's Sergeant Heath's voice. Over here, Heath.
From the tone of the sergeant's voice, I'd say he'd found something.
I certainly hope so.
Hi, Mr. Markham. Well, hello, Vance. You're here on this case, too, huh?
That's right.
It's because of Vance that we're here on this case, Heath. What's up?
Well, one of my men was beating around the bushes, came up with this glove. It's all bloodstained, but all identification's been removed.
Let me see that, will you, Heath?
Sure, here you are.
Thank you.
Hey, what are you turning it inside out for? I told you all the marks had been removed.
Yes, you did.
Oh, even the button's been yanked off. Guess it had the name of the maker on it.
Well, that's true, of course, but this glove is very informative just the same.
What do you mean, Vance?
Well, for one thing, it hasn't lain in the bushes very long, which means it probably was thrown away by the murderer of Eddie Macon, who's only been missing 24 hours.
Well, so what? What good is that if we can't tell anything about the murderer?
We can tell a lot about him from this glove, Heath.
Huh?
If I were you, I'd send out an alarm for a tall, thin man, about 6'2", immaculate in dress, left-handed, carries a walking stick, and, yes, he's blonde.
Huh?
Vance, how in the world do you know that?
Let's get in your car and drive over to see Eddie Macon's mother, Markham. I'll tell you all about it on the way.
First of all, that's definitely an Oregon. I think it's a Hammond. And how did he know all that stuff that he wore? He was blonde, he had a walking stick, and he was 6'2", he was slim, immaculately dressed. How did he know all that, Lisa?
I don't know. He must know something we do not.
We have to get back to that soon. I need to know how he knew all of that stuff.
Okay.
That is the Red Duck murder case. Philo Vance, detective starring Jackson Beck. We'll get back to it right after the news, but first, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is 1:37. Thank you, Roger Badish. We are listening to Philo Vance Detective, Lisa. This is a really good detective case. I'm dying to know how he knew all of those things about this potential murderer on this show.
Well, I think you're about to find out.
Yeah, this was a syndicated radio show by Frederick W. Ziv, and he syndicated a lot of radio programs, one of which was Boston Blackie, which is my favorite radio show. We had someone text in earlier and say, what's Carl's favorite radio show? Boston Blackie. And then after Boston Blackie, I would have to say Suspense, which we listened to earlier. And I always liked Inner Sanctum Mysteries, too. You know, Inner Sanctum's great, and The Whistler. I'm a big kind of mystery
Oh, you
fan.
Are a mystery.
Yeah, you're a mystery. And I know your favorite is My Favorite Husband. Right?
That was probably the first radio show that I ever heard, just kind of came upon it on the radio.
Yeah. And then Mike.
And I just was mesmerized.
Yeah, Lucille Ball is so great. We should play one of those soon.
Please.
You know, we have the whole schedule.
Yeah.
I think it's up. I think it's posted, the entire schedule through the end of the year.
I think it's on our website.
Yeah, WGNRadiotheater.com is our website. And we will also have a podcast. That's, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, you're on late. You have a, you know, you come on at 11 o'clock. Boy, that's it's past my bedtime. It's past my bedtime, too.
I think we're staying up for, though.
You know, I normally am in bed by about 11. I watch a little TV. You know what I've been taping lately?
A little TV? Don't you have one of those big TVs?
Yeah, I do have a big TV.
Okay, never mind.
Roger,
he's
do you
got
like
an 80-inch
Do you like
4D.
This show? I've been taping Two and a Half Men.
Oh my God, that's all the reruns? You're taping all the reruns?
I'm taping all the reruns. I'm taping, yeah, because it's not on in new time production.
No, they don't have any new versions. Yeah.
And the
Which
show.
Do you like the earlier ones or
yes,
the later
the
ones?
Earlier ones. Yeah. But I think Kutcher does a great job. I mean, I think he does a really nice job.
Mm-hmm.
But the brother, oh, God, he's so funny.
Yeah.
John Cryer, he is so funny on that show. And the writing is so hilarious. It's just hilarious.
I haven't seen that show in so many years.
Oh, my gosh. I've been taping it. I watch a couple a day, you know. Just funnier than...
Some people have all the time.
Super funny
stuff.
Some
people do. And speaking of time, I think Philo Vance has something to tell us.
Yeah, what does he have to tell us?
How he solved all that stuff.
Oh, should we get back to it?
I would love to, because I'm sitting on the edge of my seat.
All right, let's get back now to Philo Vance
that
Detective.
That was smooth, wasn't it?
Well, I'm waiting, Vance.
Sorry, Markham, I was just thinking of something, but it doesn't matter now. What you want to know is how I got the picture of our murder suspect just from looking at a blood-stained glove.
That's right.
Well, it's reasonably simple. The glove was a large size, leading me to assume that the murderer was a tall man. However, the fingers on the glove were very narrow, hence the killer was thin.
But the way he dressed and the fact that he was left-handed and carried a stick.
Most men who carry a stick are meticulous in dress, Markham. And the glove was a little worn between the index finger and the inside of the thumb. Only a stick would cause a worn spot such as I noticed in that particular place.
Well, granting all that, what about the fact that he was left-handed, that he was blonde, that he was well-dressed?
Left-handed? Well, the glove we found was a left glove. And apparently he carried his stick in his left hand. Blonde? I saw a very small blonde hair on the inside of the glove. The police laboratory would have detected that, I'm sure.
And what about the business of his being well-dressed?
There were traces of liquid nail polish on the tip of the inside of the fingers, Markham. Apparently, after his most recent manicure, he was in a hurry and didn't give the polish a chance to dry. That's all there is to it. That and the fact that most men who carry a stick are well-dressed.
It certainly sounds simple the way you say it. And it's just as well that the explanation's over, because here's Mrs. Megan's house.
Oh, she knows about her son.
Yes, Heath telephoned her. I imagine she's all broken up. She was almost hysterical when she came into my office to report him missing.
We'll soon find out. Coming, Markham.
Of course. What do you expect to find here, Vance?
If we're lucky, Mrs. Macon will be able to tell us which of her son's friends answers the description I feel fits the murderer.
That'll certainly simplify this case.
Yes, it will. And it's one reason that I don't believe we'll find anything. The bell, Markham.
Right. There's one thing I hate. It's dealing with hysterical women, Vance.
We may have a surprise in store for us there, too, Markham.
Yes. Oh, it is Mr. Markham.
Yes, hello, Mrs. Macon. This is Philo Vance. You remember you asked me to get him to help find your son?
Yes, and you would not do it.
It wouldn't have done any good, Mrs. Macon. Your son was already dead when you came to see Mr. Markham.
Perhaps. What is it you want?
We have a description of a man we believe might be your son's murderer. We'd like to know if you knew such a man.
What does he look like?
He's tall, blonde, dresses very well, carries a walking stick.
quite thin.
I don't know anybody like that. And neither did my son.
You can't help us?
You could not help me. I cannot help you. Good day, gentlemen.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Red Duck murder case began with the finding of the body of Eddie Macon, who had been stabbed. From a glove discovered near the scene of the crime, Philo Vance has constructed a detailed picture of the killer. So far, we have been unable to find a man answering the description. At this time, he might be almost anywhere. In a taxi, in a park, in a shop, on the street.
Come, my man. Please, just wrap it up and give it to me, and I'll take it with me. I have my car outside.
Just one moment, sir, please, if you don't mind.
One moment? What for? I'm in a hurry.
Yes, but you've given me a $100 bill. I'll have to get the change from the back to the shop. I won't be but a moment, sir.
Very well, but hurry. I don't have all day. Fine thing. Shopkeeper who can't keep change for $100 in his register.
Police headquarters.
Hello, this is Bailey at Bailey's Men's Shop on Main Street. A man is in the shop, tall, blonde, and he's carrying a stick. He just gave me a $100 bill. It's one of those counterfeits we were told to watch out for.
Good. Stall him there a few minutes. We'll be right over.
Right.
Sorry to have kept you waiting, sir. But I'll have your change in just a moment.
Very cute, weren't you? But you don't trap me. I'm getting out of here.
What? Hey, you, stop! Stop! Excuse me, please.
Well,
pardon me, please. Stop him, somebody. Somebody stop that man in the roaster there. Hey, you. You in the car. Stop. Okay.
Get off, you fool. Get off.
Oh, no, my friend. I'm hanging under this door.
I warn you to get off. This gun will change your mind. Oh, get off or I'll slam it down on your other hand. There. Now, off.
Markham speaking.
This is Vance, Markham.
Vance, I've been calling you all over town. We're hot on the trail of the blonde killer. He's tied up with a counterfeit ring. Did you know that?
No, tell me about it.
He tried to pass a counterfeit bill, and the shopkeeper almost grabbed him. He answers your description perfectly, by the way.
Good.
Well, it isn't so very good. We still don't know where to locate him.
Well, that's why I called you. I can tell you where he lives.
What?
Sergeant Heath and I made a very thorough canvas of custom tailors, better type haberdashers, and barber shops, and finally found our blonde friend's manicurist. I asked Heath to let me take it from there.
Well, that's fine with me, but do we grab our blonde counterfeiter now?
No, Markham. We're not ready for that yet. You meet me at the address I'll give you in a moment, and we'll make plans to break up the whole counterfeit ring. We'll break that up and get our murderer at the same time.
Please, Mr. D'Angelo, please turn off that printing press.
Take it easy, Georgie. You file your nails, it gets on my nerves. My press gets on yours. Same difference.
Please turn it off, won't you?
Okay, okay. Only every time it makes a noise, we make another load of dough, Georgie. Don't forget that.
I know. And money is terribly important. It buys clothes. Handmade shirts, this Homburg hat. Yes, I must have money, Joe.
You're going to roll in it in another week, Georgie.
I know, Mr. D'Angelo. You and I are very clever, aren't we?
We're the best, Georgie. The best. I make them, you pass them. When there's trouble, we handle it.
You should have seen the face of the fellow I pushed off my car.
Any chance of his tracing the car, Georgie?
None at all. I had a rag over the license plates. Horribly dirty rag.
Did an awful clean job for us. Don't forget that.
No, that's true. Mr. D'Angelo, nobody is any closer to us than they were before we killed Eddie Macon. We're completely in the clear. And we'll stay that way until we leave town. Right?
Right. One more week and we'll have enough counterfeit money made to start our own treasury department. Then, a month to drop it off in different cities. And then you know where I'm going, Georgie?
No. Where?
I'm gonna spend the rest of my life on Easy Street.
Any answer yet, Markham?
No, Vance. I'm still holding the phone, and the operator's still checking for the address.
Quite a nice apartment the blonde killer has, isn't it?
Excellent taste.
I'm still not quite sure how you found it, Vance.
Well, Markham, his type of man had to have his nails done very often, usually by the same manicurist. Sergeant Heath and I found a manicurist at one of the better hotels who had a customer answering our description. She once had to go to his apartment to do his nails and remembered the address. It was as simple as that.
Vance, everything is simple once you set to work on it. Oh. I sure wish this operator would answer.
I wish our blonde friend had been here when we broke into his apartment. All we found was that telephone number on his pad.
What happens after the operator gives us the name and address belonging to that number?
It all depends on who the number belongs to. If we think
I'm sorry to keep you waiting,
sir. Oh, wait a minute, Vance. It's all right, miss. I'm still here.
The number is listed under the name of Joseph D'Angelo Printer at 484 Jean Street.
D'Angelo Printer. Thank you very much. Vance,
I know, I heard. Well, it's all starting to tie up now, Markham. You get Heath and a squad of men. I'm going to 484 Jean Street.
Mr. D'Angelo!
Huh? What's the matter, Georgie? What's going on?
We've got to get out of here.
Oh, wait till I turn off this machine. Oh, what is this?
I just called the shop where I have my nails done. I have to make an appointment.
Yeah, never mind all that. What happened?
The girl told me a man was asking questions about me. Said he was a friend of mine. She told him where I lived and... Joe, I have this phone number written on a pad.
Oh, you jerk. Well, come on. Let's break all this stuff and throw it in the melting pot.
Yes.
Anybody comes here 2 minutes from now won't find a thing.
All that lovely money, too.
Every hunk of paper in a joint. Now, come on, hurry.
Right.
Guy who asked those questions might be here any minute now.
Yes.
Take the lid off that stove down there.
All right. This money lying around isn't dry yet. I'll get ink all over my hands.
So what? Take off your coat. We've got work to do.
I'll get ink on this beautiful shirt. I just had it made.
Take that coat off and step on it. Now here, dump these bills into the fire.
All right.
I'm going to take the press apart and knock down those plates.
Oh, my beautiful shirt. It'll be ruined. I'll get the money out of the way.
One more trip ought to make it. I'll bang this press into so many pieces nobody will know what it was.
Couldn't we save the plates? Those beautifully engraved plates on the table.
They go next. Right into the fire, pretty boy. How you doing?
I destroyed all the money.
Good. Ah, I gotta go to work on these.
I wouldn't work on anything if I were you.
Oh,
Georgie, this must be the guy who asked questions. The knife, Georgie, the knife. Only how'd he get in?
The door was open and I walked in.
The knife, Georgie, use the knife.
The knife, Mr.
Oh,
D'Angelo.
No, you don't get him, Georgie. I'll hold his arm.
No, you don't either. Oh.
I'm trying to do that more often.
You'll never do anything again, ever. This knife
Drop
will...
it. Drop that
no,
knife.
No, my arm.
Drop it. Let go. Go.
I'll drop it. But I'll get out of here. You'll never catch me.
Never saw a man so wrong in my life. Your friend's out cold, and I'm holding you here until the police come.
Stop it. Stop it and let me alone.
You stay right here against this table.
No,
no you don't.
No.
Don't try to get away.
No.
Got a gun, eh?
Stop it. You're breaking my back.
Yes.
Breaking my back. I tell
breaking
you.
My heart. I'll...
Thank you, Mr. D'Angelo. He didn't hit you as hard as you thought.
I got a tough chin. Now listen, Georgie. That guy I just slugged's Philo Vance. That means the cops will be here soon. Now, come on, help me break up this engraving plate on the table, and when the cops get here, nobody will know what we've been up to. There won't be a trace of anything.
But what about Vance?
He's yours. Yours and your knives.
Good. In that case, let's hurry and break up these plates.
I can take care of this alone. You go on over and lock the outside door so we don't have no more company.
Sure, I'll do that, Mr. D'Angelo. All locked, Mr. D'Angelo. What do we do now?
Just about taking care of these plates. That does it. Now we get to work on Vance.
Open up in there. Open up.
What? Cops.
They're breaking in the door, Mr. D'Angelo. What should we do?
Get out of here. The back way and fast. Come
no,
on.
No, not yet. I've got to take care of Mr. Vance. I've got to be...
Well, oh. Come on, men. All right. Oh. Both of you. Hold it right where you are.
Take your hands
you
off me.
You have to take care of Mr. Vance. We could have been out of here.
Sergeant, they're both yours.
All right, Mr. Markham. Hey, look at Vance on the floor.
Vance, are you all right?
Okay,
Vance,
come on, you're going with us.
What for? What do you got on us? We saw this guy break in and we slugged him. We thought he was a stick-up guy.
Mr. Markham?
Don't try anything funny, D'Angelo. We know you've been counterfeiting and we can prove it.
Yeah, how? See any phony dough around? Any plates?
Markham, Mr. D'Angelo is right.
Vance, can you get up all right?
I'll be all right in a minute. What I was saying is that Mr. D'Angelo is right. There's practically no evidence of counterfeiting in this place now.
Hey, say, what did I tell you?
Yeah. Do you see what Mr. D'Angelo told you?
I said there was practically no evidence. Turn around, my blonde friend. Turn around and show the district attorney indisputable evidence that not only was there counterfeiting going on here, but that you and Mr. D'Angelo were doing it. Not much to discuss in this case, is there, Markham?
Just one thing, Vance. Our blonde friend George in the back of his shirt.
Oh, that. Well, I suspected that D'Angelo and George would break up their plates if they succeeded in overpowering me. So, before they did, I forced George in his clean white shirt up against the engraving plate. So, when he turned around, you saw several counterfeit impressions of $100 bills on it.
Yes, we did. And I don't mind telling you, we needed that evidence to make sure that that was the end of the two counterfeiters.
George confessed rather easily, I understand.
Yes, yes, his type always does, Vance. He admitted he killed Eddie Macon.
Well, then, that little device of mine not only meant the end of the two counterfeiters, but also the end of the Red Duck murder case.
Lisa, that's the Red Duck murder case on Philo Vance Detective from May 31st, 1949, starring Jackson Beck. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I'd like to congratulate you, Lisa.
What did I do? I stayed
she
awake?
She stayed awake the whole three-hour show, Michael.
This is a big joke because all these people are texting in saying, geez, I hope Lisa's not asleep. Guys, come on here.
Michael, this is, by about 1:30, this is what I hear.
Listen, what's going on behind the scenes?
She needs her uvula clipped out.
What's going on here?
She snores loud. Her poor husband.
And Curtis will vouch for this. Carl is sleeping on the couch in the producer's room.
Don't listen to her.
On this beautiful furniture here.
Feet up and everything.
Don't listen to her.
Feet up and all.
Well, you got to see some
shoes off.
The furniture is really nice here. They really up their game here at WGN. So, yeah, I mean,
comfortable couches.
To blame it, right?
It's like a nice my pillow that you're sleeping on.
There's fluffy pillows and WGN pillows and my pillows and like. Well,
there's many times.
What about your pillows, Lisa?
I saw it coming a mile away, too.
All of a sudden, I'm speechless.
She's all of a sudden, she's verklempt.
You got to wake up, Lisa.
Yeah, right. I know. I've been just snoring away
out,
under the desk.
She was out over there.
Yeah, that's what I do. I snore away.
Michael, good to see you.
Good
it
to see
nice
you,
It was nice seeing
girl.
You at the meet and greet the other day as well. That was pretty swanky, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's an open house, but you keep calling it a meet and greet.
Yeah, it was. I call it the adult prom for WGN because a lot of people that we saw I've never seen in a tie before. So it was kind of cool.
True.
So,
yeah.
Which was kind of different.
And Carl's not an adult, and he was there, so I don't
know. Lisa actually took a shower before she came. She showered, and she got all dressed up, and she looked really nice, Lisa.
She thinks. I'm not sure that's a compliment. But
Lisa takes a shower once a week, whether she needs to or not.
If it's any consolation, both of you smell amazing right now.
Really?
Yes. Do we? I think it's me.
Okay. That probably is.
I have Creed on.
Creed?
Creed.
Is that a cologne?
Yeah, it's a cologne.
He likes to.
It's a good cologne.
Brag about his $300.
No, it's not that much money.
Pretty sure it is.
No, it's $500.
Look it up.
What do you have on, Lisa?
I have my natural scent.
Oh, it's
Carl.
Her natural scent. What are you wearing, Michael?
Dove Men.
Dove for Men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's on the show this morning?
You know, I wish I want to talk more Dove Men. I
wish I knew.
We have a great show coming up here. This is my second time that I've been on air solo, so I'm kind of still just getting the grasp of everything.
All right.
No, it's difficult.
We're going to do an all music based show. But we're going to splice in a little bit of comedy this time. We have a great group of comedians who are going to be on my roundtable: Vic Pandya, Tyler Fowler, and Paige Blair.
Wait a minute now. You just heard some of my jokes.
Yes.
I mean, we're pretty funny. We're feeling left out.
I need to be on your show next time and tell some jokes.
What are you talking about?
You think you'll be awake in an hour?
Best comedians you've ever met right here in the room with you.
I know.
I know.
I know.
You're funny. Like,
I was listening.
How am I like funny? I'm funny like how? How am I funny? All right. So who else is on the show?
We got the comedians coming on. Then we have Doma Tipongo, who is going to be talking about the new Eminem album and all the controversy.
And he's funny, too, besides.
He's so good. He should be on the panel, too.
He should. I don't know what's going on here. What are you thinking?
What does Eminem stand for, besides the candy?
I don't know.
What's his name? Isn't it Michael Mathers or something?
I don't know.
Like that?
Marshall Mathers.
Marshall Mathers.
Oh, you were so close.
Only
though.
One
couple letters
word
off.
You were like going a little bit towards Michael
pretty
Myers.
Close.
Which
yeah,
is
maybe
the
Michael Myers.
Myers. Michael Heidemann,
Myers, either the actor or the guy with the hatchet in the movies.
Yeah, one or the other.
Austin Powers or an evil guy.
You know, there's an Austin Powers in the works. He was on, I don't know, one of these shows talking about the fact that there will be another Austin Powers movies.
Oh, thank goodness.
Love those movies.
They were the best. The best soundtrack, too.
Just great. That guy's a genius. Mm-hmm. Guy mm-hmm. really is a genius. Mm-hmm. And what else besides the music and the comedians?
A lot of music. And then we're going to be talking to...
Dominique.
Are you guys fans of Led Zeppelin?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
One of the greatest 70s rock bands of all time.
Stairway to Heaven.
It's Doma T, but you can call him Doma T.
I said Doma T. Play it back.
Okay.
Said it. What about Led Zeppelin?
We have the group Greta Van Fleet that are going. I'm going to replay an interview that I did at Lollapalooza of them, and they are the incarnation of Led Zeppelin for 2018. A group of young kids, probably 19 years old, group of brothers who are just taking over the industry by storm. So we're going to be playing that around.
Do you know why the band is named Led Zeppelin? This is not a joke. Do you know why? You know how this all came about?
His finger is near the rim.
No. This is not a joke.
Why?
So the lead singer, they asked. You know, he was putting the band together. They didn't have a name yet, and they said, "What do you think of your band? What do you think?" He goes, "It's going to go over like a Led Zeppelin," and that stuck. Whoa. And they called the. That's a true story, I think.
That's a really.
I think it's a true story.
I think it sounds like he made it up.
I may have dreamed it. I may have dreamed it.
He may have made it up.
No, I think it's a true story. We should check on that,
Curtis,
one, folks.
Curtis, I need you to check that real quick. Fact
could you, Curtis? Mm-hmm. Could you see if that's what happened? Did he actually say it like this?
You're really good at accents.
We're going to go over like a Led Zeppelin.
You can only say it once. It's only funny once.
I didn't mean it to be funny.
And it wasn't even... Never mind.
I think the three of us should do a... we'll stay on with you. Then
yeah.
You just do the whole show.
Carl's got
you're
it
on
all...
Until what time?
Carl's got your show all worked out for you.
The only problem is I have parking only till 2:30.
Ooh, okay.
So, and that's when I always go to get my teeth cleaned. And I always go to the dentist at
2:30?
2:30.
Oh, my gosh.
I should be on the show with you doing comedy.
Michael, I was trying to signal you, but you just weren't looking.
What?
Poor Michael.
Why did I even book these comedians when I got Carl right next to me?
Because you needed a comedian.
I'm gonna do a you know the owner of Zanies, he is going to call me one of these days.
What's he gonna call you? What's he gonna call you?
What's he gonna call me? He's gonna call me. It's like we were doing karaoke, and before we were even done, we were getting calls from the American Idol and Voice people.
Wow.
They
want us on The Voice.
It was a preemptive move. They told them don't even bother.
As a duo.
Listen to the voice of reason up there. Hot dog. Hey, hot dog man.
Yeah. Hot dog man, look at your clock.
I was listening earlier.
You're taking away from Michael's show.
We don't need any news.
Carl's parking is going to go out in about 20 minutes.
Another 20 minutes.
That's okay. He can afford it. Don't worry about it.
Well, he wears $500 cologne.
That's right. What's another 50 bucks?
It's called cash.
It's actually $600.
Oh, man.
Creed.
Look it up.
Okay.
All right. Let's go. Band. Let's go to news.